Who's Afraid of Summer?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
No place to go, darling.
Good morning, Chicago, 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show with you till 10 o'clock this morning. Gang's all here as we all fight through the melancholy that is the post-Monday of what I think. Dave and I are going at the probably the worst playoff loss in franchise history. Dave fights back on that.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, if you were at Soldier Field in January of 1987 and Washington came in and beat them when they were the number one seed, they had home field throughout. Yeah. And then again in 88, they had the 49ers here in the NFC Championship game. It got blown out. But the one against Washington, because they were the overwhelming favorites to go back to the Super Bowl.
They were not close.
They weren't close.
Well, I think Darryl Green ran a punt back in the fourth quarter to break it open. But
there was no Cody Parkey.
It didn't come down to a field goal off the upright.
Was it tipped or was it not tipped?
It sure looks like it was tipped a little bit.
I feel a little bit better that it was tipped, don't you?
I think that's the
not necessarily, because you still, you know, when a kicker misses a field goal, it's not always all on the kicker. It's a process. There's the snap, there's the hold.
I saw Chris Cluey, who's the former punter for the Vikings, say on Deadspin that Cody Parkey made that mistake. His plant foot went too close to the snap, and therefore he swung it wide. It was not the snap. It was not.
Well, and
the
they
hold,
said that so. The kick he did that ended up getting not counting. That was like a line drive. That one was low as like he. Yeah. Didn't do something.
But I mean, he
and they weren't trying to block that one anyway.
And he did the right thing when they called the timeout. You take that practice swing. It's just like a golfer. It's a free swing. So go ahead and take it.
This has been, I think, all of us, everybody on this staff, I can't speak for Mary or Steve, but everybody in this room had a tough time sleeping because just about what to say, how to get over your emotions of watching and going through that roller coaster yesterday. But that, you know what, that's sport, and that's the fun of it. And, you know, they say you win, you get excited, you lose, you get depressed, and we move on, and now we can move on to other important things like life.
Dave, I don't know if you watch the post game. I loved when somebody asked Nagy something about seeing Parkey, and he said, "Don't write that story. Don't let this season be defined by this one kick." He was
plus he couldn't find him.
I'll say this much about Cody Parkey, and this was almost unanimous from the reporters who were there in the locker room, that he took every question. He stood.
What's he going to do?
And
right?
So, well, listen, Justin, a lot of guys hide in that situation.
Yeah, you're right.
They go in the trainer's room and you don't see them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's probably the worst moment of his professional life.
We'll talk to Hamp today and Adam Hogue as well, because there's so much to talk about. I think that the Bears, if you know, we're such homers and we want to say it's a kicker, but when you look at all phases of the game yesterday, they were not playoff ready. They let the Eagles beat them. I mean, the defense played great, but when they needed to play, they couldn't stop them. The offense, one touchdown at home in a playoff game, you're not going to win in most playoff games. The punter shanked a punt close to the end of the game and gave him a short field to get that score. There's a lot going wrong with the Bears yesterday.
Do over.
Right.
Dave, I called it.
How about you did call it?
Yeah. Do
called
over.
It. I think that I had the closest.
You did.
14-14.
No. I called a do-over.
Oh.
Yeah.
Replay. Yeah. I mean, it should be best 2 out of 3.
If we lose.
Well, of course. If we win, it's one and you move on.
At least in baseball, you get to play 5 or 7. Yeah. No, you just play one.
Where do you think this film of the tip will go? Like the Zapruder film?
I think it already is. I've seen it frame by frame now. but here's the other question. If it was tipped, is that on the kicker? Is that on his blocking? Did somebody miss an assignment? Did the guy just make a great play to get a finger on it?
We have some of the great physicists in the world that live in this city.
Yeah, that's good.
They could establish the trajectory, the impact of his foot on the ball,
right,
and whether or not the speed of the ball and the trajectory of the ball at the time
right.
allowed the kick to be tipped and therefore the direction to be changed. These are important things we need to have solved.
Did the atmospheric conditions change?
We don't know what the barometric pressure was at the time of the impact of the kick.
I think our time would be better spent checking the emergency rooms to see how many people ended up there last night with heart palpitations.
I saw last night the one thing. I was so down, and I saw a tweet from a mom in Aurora who said, when the Bears lost, my daughter, middle school daughter, puked all over the floor.
Oh, come on.
She threw it because they lost?
Oh, yeah. See? The nerves, I tell you.
And that made me laugh. That made me chuckle, because I was like, well, we all got it bad, and everyone's feeling bad. But then you feel this kid, and you're like, they've internalized it, and they got it so excited about it, and that made me go, oh.
I couldn't eat dinner. I wasn't even hungry anymore.
I think you got to celebrate this season. I do.
Yeah.
You do.
Maybe tomorrow.
Nobody expected to be here. Nobody expected to be in this position.
Kendall Gale posted a video of his son bawling, crying after.
I think vomiting, crying children is the best way to celebrate the Bears season.
Yeah, and post videos of your kids crying on Facebook. That would really.
That's a whole other thing. I don't understand making kids cry for entertainment. I don't get that.
I love it. I can't get enough
of it. It's a stupid Kimmel bit.
In particular, I like the kids on Santa's lap crying.
No, that's idiotic. You're a mean person. Go home.
How about? Do we have any videos of kids reading a book while the game was going on? Because that was my son. I was like, do you not care about this? Nobody cares about this in the house? He's like, he's reading his book. He does not care about football.
Well, someday, because of your poor parenting, he may end up as a leader of the free world, as opposed to some chump drinking booze.
Posting pictures of him freaking out when the sport team loses.
6:16. We'll do your top six. A lot of this today. You coerced Adam Hoge to join us early?
I did. Because, today they're going to be cleaning out their lockers.
As they should.
Right. And
break this team up.
I didn't know if Adam would be heading out on a plane on Tuesday himself, so I thought we better get
not, not to my knowledge.
Okay. No. No, it doesn't appear. And also, of course, Hamp will be on. Did anybody catch the online version of the Hamp thing last night?
The Bears season's going to end on a double doink.
A double doink.
That was a good line by Collinsworth.
Yeah. And maybe since it was tipped, it was a triple doink.
That's a good point. Yeah. 1, 2, 3. It's a good dance. We should invent the triple dunk.
Triple dunk?
Yeah.
You just did.
I just like the mascot when he just fell over.
No, Staley? Did you
poor
see
guy.
That?
He just...
He looked more confused than Matt Nagy, though. Matt Nagy afterwards went, wait, that's not the way it's supposed to end. Hold on now.
It's not.
It's over, kids, for now. Hey, the Hawks had a big win.
They sure did.
Hawks beat Pittsburgh. We got a lot to talk about. Coming up.
It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Don't kick.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
And drunken Hollywood stars got together at the Golden Globes last night. And apparently were really drunk because some of the choices were pretty bizarre. Your big winner was We Are the Champions. Surprise big winner. And Dean will go over it later, unless you have something to add now.
Not about that, but I just I wanted people to feel sorry for me because I thought the Bears were going to the Super Bowl. I had scheduled all of our Bears talks on our show schedules for the next, 4 weeks.
Oh, no. So you're going to have to go back and correct those?
So I have to go back and take Hamp and Hoge off and other Bears football
games. I'm sorry, no. I think that may be the number one concern of people this morning now
That's what I thought.
Up.
That's a
great Justin, who is Bob Campbell?
Bob Campbell, it was a 16-inch softball Hall of Famer, a legend in Chicago who passed away this, I think it was Thursday or Friday. There was a lot of great posts about him and his contributions to the sport, and he will be sadly missed. And rest in peace, Bob.
Politics next. Rum manual ordering an audit of workers' compensation program, formerly overseen by Ed Burke, as everyone bails off the good ship, Ed. People can't jump fast enough now. Ed Burke is accused, but not convicted, of engaging in what amounts to a blackmail scheme to allow a Burger King to have the access it needed to operate in the city and expand. And Ed said, sure, we can get this done. We can help you out. My guys normally get a little taste here, and I don't mean of the Whopper. that's where the Ed Burke thing stands. But everybody's bailing on Ed as fast as possible. And again, you got to watch out now because Ed knows everything. Ed knows. That's what it echoes through the hallways of City Hall. People walking around going, you know, Ed knows. Ed
so that's knows. How he'll make a deal.
Yeah, I don't see Ed Burke going, you know, I'd love to die in prison. I'd be very surprised if he's
what
not already talking about
what kind of dirt would he have, though, on who? Who's bigger than Ed Burke? I mean, I guess Toni Preckwinkle would be scared. She sent out the big item last night I got in my inbox.
Everybody since 1970.
Yeah, I guess.
Next. Toni Preckwinkle, speaking of Toni Preckwinkle, says she's given back the $116,000 from Ed Burke. Ed Burke raised that, and that supposedly was the money he was asking for from the Burger King.
Well, that was a part that he raised that at a party at his house.
Yeah.
That amount.
You know, I have to say in that story that I will give Toni Preckwinkle credit. She's been attached to the story because it was the fundraising party, like you mentioned. But, you know, the other candidates have been, you know, they've admonished Burke and they've been angry about it, or they've, you know, defiant. But Preckwinkle went as far as to say she wants him to step down as alderman and committeeman of the 14th Ward.
Well, she also was the alleged beneficiary of the Burger King money. Such an idiotic sentence.
Right.
Next. The kick we talked about, but Dave, do you have anything else additionally to add to this horrible kick story from the Bears game? That was a Coach was Matt it. Nagy.
Oh no! That sums it up. Yeah. I what else do you say about it? I mean, everybody is thinking. You had to be if you followed this team at all. After Philadelphia took the timeout, he kicked the first one, kicked it through, and now you're thinking, oh no! Then now he's got to kick it again.
You know what? You know when I knew Parkey was in trouble. I'm not kidding about this. He kicks the first one. The timeout's called at the absolute last second.
Yep.
It splits the uprights.
Yep.
And he turns around and his shoulders dropped. And he goes, oh, man, I made that one. He had that whole sort of countenance about it.
Who is
you can't have that. You're a kicker. Step up. Hit it again.
Who is the kicker in Minnesota? Walsh, who missed one in the playoffs a couple years ago in Seattle? Yeah, Walsh, the control room. Yeah, and then last year, the Minnesota Miracle against the Saints. So I guess every playoff, there's going to be one heartbreak that fans go through, and I guess it's going to be the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears fans, come on, man. Nobody expected 12-4. Let's perk up.
Well, isn't there
a come on, you got to give us a couple days.
No,
that was
I can't.
The worst way to lose a playoff game.
Oh,
that
I don't
you
think
can
so. The worst way would have been a Lake Michigan flood that pours in to Soldier Field.
That would have been a postponement.
Well, there was also a
Hail Mary
kicker,
been
issue
bad.
On Saturday, Dave. Who's that chubby kicker with the bald old chubby kicker?
Sebastian Janikowski
for
first
Seattle.
First off, he's not chubby, he's fat. And secondly,
260 pounds.
Yes, and secondly, apparently blew out his hammy.
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And by the way,
that's an actual ham in his thigh.
Because he didn't do the 10-minute yoga. He should have done that.
And then they had the onside kick at the end, and the punter drop-kicked the onside kick.
There was a discussion on the sideline about whether or not it was legal or illegal to drop-kick a field goal. It's legal, by the way, to drop-kick a field goal because this kid's a drop-kicker. And he didn't think he could hit anything from a standard placement. And then they practice on the side. And there was one kick. He missed the net. The net is 3 yards in front of the fake tee.
Right. But the onside kick wasn't even close. He kicked it over everybody.
No, he punted. Full punt. You know, you don't need a full punt there. And then there's the most important story. Thank you, Homer. The government shutdown is about to enter its third week. If it makes it to the weekend, it'll be the longest shutdown in government history. If it goes through tomorrow, payroll will not be made for federal workers, and federal workers will miss another paycheck, which means they will go without pay for a month. And for any of you that maybe don't have a lot of sympathy for this and go, shut up, it's not a big deal, go without pay for the next month. Don't take a paycheck for the next month. See how you're doing.
The thing that I find somewhat concerning is that the Trump administration is finding ways to mask some of the trouble spots of the partial shutdown. So they want to do some things that some lawmakers believe to be unconstitutional or illegal. They want to take the ticket price of a federal park and use that money right now to be able to get people to clean up the bathrooms. And that's not how it works. That's not how the law works. You can't do that. So they're going to the lengths because they don't want to cave and compromise or do what they have to do to get the government reopened. They're going to lengths to change the law so that the partial shutdown can continue.
Two crucial stories that broke, both in the Washington Post and both are sort of revelatory. One was, I think, Thursday or Friday, which broke that the Trump administration just now realized that this is a big deal. That nobody in the planning stages, nobody in the discussion stages knew this would be a big deal. Secondly, on Friday and Saturday, there was initial reporting confirmed yesterday that the reason this is a big deal to Donald Trump is because his crazy little bespectacled Harry Potter looking old friend. What's that guy's name that's about to go to jail? The old guy? The guy that's friends with WikiLeaks.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. The guy with the plane.
Yeah, it's early.
The private plane.
And Sam Nunberg, this weird little assistant dude, they both went to Trump and told him, you got to talk about immigration in the campaign speeches. You got to talk about immigration. You got to talk about immigration. And they put the words, build a wall, in one of his speeches at one of the rallies. Got a nice applause line. He's a builder. Then he started repeating it. That's why he's so concerned about it.
Wow.
Top six is complete.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top Six at Six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
I'm not saying I'm not upset about the Bears. I'm just saying maybe the wave of grief will hit me later.
Wednesday is the day that you say, all right, move on. I'm
upbeat about the year, man. This is a good team.
I know. Just keep it to yourself.
I can't.
Less grief.
I can't. It's a microphone. Let's get to the headlines now. And standing by in the newsroom is Steve Grzanich. By the way, Steve sent me, well, the rest of you as well, right? Wasn't that a group text?
It was.
A group text, the most entertaining of all videos immediately after, which was Charlie Brown getting the ball pulled out from Lucy.
I thought it was a bit insensitive.
Yeah, I wasn't ready for that.
It was too quick.
Yeah, you're right.
Too quick.
A couple of people had said that to me, but you know what? It was really funny.
It was hilarious, Steve. Well done by you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was funny.
I don't get to pull very many funny ones off.
No, strong move by
you guys can laugh while I cry. That's great.
Yeah. Well, after Michigan and this, I don't know how you're even up.
Why don't you shut it?
It's one of those things where you got to laugh or you will cry. So that's, you know, that's why I did it.
Come on, people. Yeah. Come on. Suck it up. Think how Cody Parkey feels this morning. He killed the whole city. Next.
Woke up after midnight. Both my arms and legs were sore.
Canterbury Carolers for Doc Most. I hope he's enjoying.
On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call. I got edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Harmonizing pink stuff in my eye.
I got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now.
All right, kids, bring it home.
He's Northwestern Medicine VP. Call Dr. Most right now.
How about it?
How good is that?
They need an award.
That is so tremendous.
Good. Oh, man.
Dr. Kevin Most, have you heard that yet?
I have not heard that. That's really good.
Captured the Christmas season, didn't it?
Yeah.
And we had them do it on New Year's Eve as well. So they did it live in the crowd on New Year's Eve as well.
Was it better the second time?
I just think it should be Doc's ringtone. Yeah, and I think you should not answer the phone.
You figure out how to do that, I'll do it.
Yeah, just not answer the phone. Just let it ring where you hear the whole song every time. We're concerned about grieving in the city this morning post-Bears. You got a cheer-up medical thing they can do other than go right to the booze or the drugs?
Wow, you know, how bad, how depressing. And you know what? The guy I really feel sorry for is Cody Parker. You know,
Cody Parker. Cody Parker's a sitcom kid.
Yeah, but he just feels sorry for the kid, and he knocks it through on the timeout, and then that happens again to him. You know, and this is not like, you know, he's hit it, what, six times, I think? It's not like he's missing wide, you know, like a mile. So
I think he's the only kicker statistically that anybody can find that hit the upright seven times in one season.
How about
that?
Yeah. Wow.
It's not easy to do, frankly. I mean, you know, we work on his accuracy and move him left 3 or 4 inches. I mean, it's going to be good.
But hey, you know what?
So what do you do? What do you do when you're really sad? When you're really sad, how do you move on, Doc?
You know what? It's time to start to focus on other things.
That's
it. Get out, and whether it's another sports event or get out and do some exercise.
That's it.
Start to do some things for yourself.
Exercise always helps.
There you go, Super Joe. That's for you, buddy.
That's it. Get out and work out. Now, let's say you bet a lot of money on the game and you're broke now. What do you do about that?
You get a second job.
All right. There you go. Yep. That's why you're Dr. Most.
Yep.
All right. One other thing that's really not a main agenda item, but on Friday I did a story about Pete the Groin Crusher from Pennsylvania. And I'd never heard the term, and apparently it's an actual medical thing. This is post-cardiac surgery, where you have to apply pressure to the femoral artery to create clotting so someone doesn't have internal bleeding. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, it's more after cardiac catheterization or stent placement. You know, they'll put a catheter into your groin, into your femoral artery, and your femoral artery is big, and it pumps a lot of blood through that, you know, supplies your entire legs.
Doc, most, what does big mean? Like a size of a quarter? What?
Yeah, probably about the size of a quarter. Yep.
That's a big artery.
It is. And, I mean, there's a lot of blood going through there. So what happens is we put this puncture hole in there, and, you know, if you hear about people who have been shot with a gun in the leg or break their leg badly, you know, that's the artery you're concerned about, because you can bleed out pretty quickly. So, yeah, we have groin crushers. That used to be the resident's job during residency after catheterization. You'd sit there and you'd hold that groin for 20 minutes and try to decide what you're going to talk to this individual about.
Interesting way you meet people.
Yeah, it is. Now, things have changed. You know, we're getting away
from
groin crushers.
Got an app for it now?
Well, we don't have an app, but we have things called closure devices. So whether it puts a stitch in there, a clip in there, or actually puts a plug in there, it allows us to make sure that it's more safe and that it's more consistent than, you know, hoping that you're going to form a clot as you hold that leg for 20 minutes.
And as you come out of, you know, any sort of anesthetic, even if it's a local and you're a little loopy, if you hear discussion of groin crushing, it doesn't mean you should get up and try to run. It's okay.
Correct.
All right. So New Year's resolutions being broken all over the place. What do you know?
Well, you know, it's nothing special about December 31st going into January 1st. There's nothing that you're going to say, I am going to change because it's a new year. And what we find is that a vast, vast, vast majority, sometimes up to 90% of New Year's resolutions are broken. And a vast majority of them are broken before February. So you get this sense of, again, you're talking about sense of depression with the Bears. How about if you said, this is what I'm going to do, and you were able to do it for 5 days?
You know, what?
You get a sense of depression.
Kevin, we were talking on
Friday. Dr. Most, careful.
Dr. Most, sorry. Yes. we were talking on Friday with a friend of the show, Kelly Keatley, about Dry January. And my sister and some of her girlfriends are doing Dry January, and they were at a party on Sunday, and everyone but Katie has already gone back to
jail. Oh, everybody's bailed.
Yeah, except for Katie. So,
all right, so that's why there's a concept called micro resolutions. And we come back, Doc is going to explain what that is. And now maybe we, the fat, happy Americans, except for those who are barefoot, you know, maybe this is something we need to go to, micro resolutions. Doc will explain in just a second. It's Northwestern Medicine. The pursuit of better health care starts here. That brings you Dr. Kevin Most. All right, what's a micro-resolution?
Well, micro-resolutions are resolutions that are just shorter than a total year's resolution. So what we're looking at in the health field is we're saying people grab this and they say, I am going to do this for the entire next year. And we find that they fail. And
so make your goal attainable? Is that where you're going?
Exactly. Okay. Make it attainable. Make it something that is going to change, and hope that some of the changes that you make throughout the month will be sustainable throughout the year. So it's easier to say for the month, well, except for Mary Sandberg's friends, but it's easier to say for the month of January, I am going to do X, and know that January is going to end, and then February will start a new micro-resolution.
Well, and you might feel better after you stick with it for the 30 days, or then you continue, I suppose, right?
Absolutely. If you say, let's say you're a smoker and you say, for the month of January, I am going to knock out 4 cigarettes a day. And you get to February, all of a sudden, you may have changed something there that is going to continue that. So maybe you're down 2 cigarettes a day. Whatever it is, some portion of that is sustainable, and you get the health impact for the initial month that you're trying to do something.
So a month of no fast food, a month of no candy, a month of no screen time in the kitchen or at dinner. Not getting rid of your phone, just saying during dinner, I'm going to pay attention to the people I'm having dinner with. That is funny when you go to a restaurant and you see couples, and they're both looking at their phones and not talking to each other. It's like, well, why'd you go out?
Exactly.
I mean, just stay home.
The micro-resolutions, some of them are going to be health-related. Some will be mental health-related, physical health-related. Some will be relationship-building as far as, you know, putting the phone down. Yeah. It's amazing what you learn from your kids, probably, if you don't allow phones in the den or at the dinner time.
Well, think about this. You sent me a note on this. Let's say you spend $5 on a coffee at Starbucks, and you cut that out.
Yeah.
$5 a day is $150 a month. It's $1,800 for the year.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with $1,800?
Wouldn't that be a nice vacation?
You're starting to sound like a pledge drive. That's what we would always say on DZ. We'd be like, how much you pay for coffee every day? What if you gave that to public radio?
Yeah. There's lots of examples. We'll post these notes, too, because Doc put some great examples in here. A month of a fruit or a vegetable with every meal. A month of going to sleep an hour earlier than you normally do. A month of giving up Facebook. I mean, these are all things that, you know, maybe you want to do, maybe you don't want to do. But if there's one that strikes your fancy, try it.
Absolutely. And, you know, if you look at what's going on in advertising right now this time of the year, you probably noticed how many commercials have you seen with Ray Liotta, you know, pushing Chantix to
stop
smoking?
What? He quit smoking?
How many Weight Watchers have, you know, how many health club commercials? So they're all looking to cash in on these individuals that want to try this for a long time. And what we're saying is science has shown us and history has shown us is that people are going to fail. So let's work on a shorter distance and have more applications of it.
I like that. What about Cody Parkey, a month of not hitting a goalpost, you know, or an upright, crossbar?
Yeah, a month or two.
Kicking, don't hit an upright.
Correct.
That's what I'm saying. Did you have a nice weekend, by the way?
I did. You know, it was kind of nice. You know, I hadn't taken a long time off for a while, so it was kind of nice to have a little bit of time off to regenerate. And I was down in North Carolina quite a bit, so got in a little bit of golf and got a little bit of vitamin D sun, and it was good. I remembered how to get to work, so that was most important.
Well, that's good. Can you believe that with 71,000 fans at Notre Dame Stadium, that I ran into your brother in the parking lot leaving? The very last fans we saw was your brother.
Yeah. He told me that. He said, you know, they went down to the game, and they were staying in South Bend, so they were not doing the drive back. He said everyone gets in their cars, and they're all sitting there and just in gridlock. They had brought a hockey pucks and sticks and goals and food, and he said, we're just playing out there, and all of a sudden we see, you know, the Boyles come out, and we're just yelling at them, and they came over, and they really had a good time. So thanks for stopping by and saying hi to them.
Lot. Two cars in your section, one's yours, one's theirs.
Yes. Right. And
small world.
Something, a side note, when we came into that parking lot, we were directed by the people running the parking lot to park in a handicapped spot because they were using all their spots and they knew what they were doing. But when we were leaving, some other guy, not with your brother, started screaming, oh, look at Pat Boyle parking in a handicapped spot. But like, that was how they organized the lot. We did not park there, you know, on our own, but it didn't look good.
It doesn't look good.
No, at that point, you just leave the car running up front.
That could go viral.
Yeah, it was really bad.
One last thing, from the 815, Steve, you need to do a resolution to stop saying for more than a month. Okay.
You know what I saw also? I'm sorry, if I could just say that there's going to be the American Academy of Pediatrics is starting a 10-year study of 11,000 10 and 11-year-olds right now, following them on what screen the effects of screen time for the next 10 years.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. I don't like, though, I don't want to wait, Doc Most. I don't want to wait for 10 years.
Well, you know, we talked about that a little bit last in December there about that study and what's going on, because the study was originally looking at just a few things, and now it has expanded its breadth of what it's going to look at, everything from drug use to smoking to screen time so it's great that they're going to involve these kids and enroll these kids, and thanks for the parents, because this is going to be very powerful information.
Ross and I watched a game with my mom, his grandmother, last night, and the three of us were hanging out because my little sister hates sports and mocks my mother when she watches it. So we hung out with my mom, and we, you know, this notion came up from your brother, your other brother, Kurt. We need to get your mom and my mom together. They'll tear this town up.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Be really careful if you do that.
Be a really, really, really slow but delightful bar crawl.
Correct.
Thank you, Doc.
You got it. Talk to you guys soon.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, the pursuit of better health care starts here at 6:56. What do you got, Steve? Oh, we did that, didn't we?
We did that, yeah.
I'm so not used to running this show on
time. You're
on time,
yeah.
That throws me off. Here's what we have. We have Steve in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up next.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
43-yard attempt from the right hash mark.
Not like this. Not like this.
Third prize is your fire.
Did this hit the upright and the crossbar? Bears season's going to end on a double doink.
Bottom line, it doesn't go through. The Philadelphia Eagles going to the Elite Eight.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
Oh, how about a Golden Globe for Super Joe? Nice job.
That was nice.
I did that through my tears, by the way.
Sponsored by, it's amazing you can see the equipment. Sponsored by Chevy. DriveChicago.com. Hamp joins us at the conclusion of a great bear season. Sure, it ended horribly. But the conclusion of a great bear season, Hamp.
Well, and first off, you're exactly right. That was a wonderful open. Just like he probably didn't sleep last night either. And, you know, it's one of those losses where you could taste the win. And, come on, let's cut to the chase. You know, this Cody Parkey experiment has got to be over. And, you know, Steve, look, there's certain times where you just got to stand up and deliver. And this kid hasn't done it. He's missed 11 kicks, and, you know, we can you know, hang it on him, and we'll talk about the fact that now it's being said that Trayvon Hester, one of the defensive linemen for the Eagles, got a finger on it. Okay, well, all that, you know, the bottom line is, you know, for such a great season, and you are exactly right, nobody expected and nobody predicted that the Bears would have this type of a season, go 12-4, be able to accomplish so many things, and yet we feel so empty because we know we left so much on the sidelines. We didn't put it on the field. And we're talking about Cody, but what about, you know, Matt Nagy? You know, he blew the time management there inside of 2 minutes at the end of the game. So many things could have been done differently that would have gave us a lot better chance, especially down at the other end zone when we're trying to score. What about the shank punt by Pat O'Donnell?
Sure, absolutely.
That set up a short field. What about our number one ranked defense, the fearsome Great Bears, where they have to step up? It was a 12-play, 60-yard drive for a touchdown that you had to make a play. You just had to, and we did. What about, you know, the bird box offense of Nagy the first three quarters, where it was like we were scared to challenge the Eagles. We were 0-for-3 in the red zone. So, yeah, Cody Parkey is the GOAT, but there's a lot of other guys that, you know. And we're, okay, like I said, I got up at 5 o'clock, and I had a pain in my groin too, but it was actually around the backside. Not where was Trey Burton? Where was he? And, you know, this phony baloney, oh, well, I woke up and I had an issue. I don't know what's going on there, but that kid, the last two games of the season, he was instrumental in what we're trying to do on the offense, and I don't know why he didn't play. I think, you know, that was a huge, huge part of the game, him not being available.
All right, several questions here. By the way, this is all Robbie Gould's fault. He was in the house. Would it have killed him to come down and make that kick? He could have come down. It would have been over. All right, so the coaches in this league, in my opinion, go too much off charts, too much off analytics. You know, and maybe I'm the old guy on the porch with the lemonade, but you don't always need to go to a two-point conversion because it says you go to a two-pointer on the chart. That's a tie game if he takes a point there.
You're exactly right. And what about the selection of the play? You know, we got Khalil Mack in the game. And, okay, how much time does it take to set up all this stuff with all these defense? You know what I'm saying? I just – and then we give the ball on a – shovel pass to the smallest player on the football team. You know, Taylor Gabriel, who was great in space, but down there with the, you know, the 320-pound lineman everywhere, it just that was truly a head scratcher. But you know what? You're exactly right. That is where you look at the chart, and every coach does it, and they look at the chart and they say, "Okay, I got to go for two," and they do it. It's almost, you know, a knee-jerk reaction. But again, the play selection. That is, how many times have they ran the shovel pass? And by the way, the last time I heard, for you know, the whole week before, is Nagy and the other coach were connected at the hip for 10 years, and they could read each other's minds. So I didn't understand why you're going back to the well for the 15th time with the same play.
Hamp, the one thing that I heard most, I think, after the game, aside from can you believe that he hit the upright, was where was Tariq Cohen on offense in this game? He caught three passes. He ran the ball, I think, one time in the game. And he's been such a dynamic playmaker, you would think they would have found ways to get him the ball.
Well, no question that, you know, and that was part of the game within the game. Now, here's, you know, and everybody goes, well, you know, you guys were great in the Super Bowl. And Walter was so despondent because the New England Patriots were keying on him everywhere he went. There was two, three guys assigned to him to go get him and disregard pretty much everything else about the offense, which opened it up for Sui and Willie Gault and everybody. Well, yesterday, that was pretty much kind of the status quo with what the Eagles were doing. They were going to say, you know what? We know who the Bears' offense is. It is, you know, Tariq Cohen making big plays, and we're not going to let that happen. And they were in and out with him. They had a safety walking down and trying to keep and normally they had a slot guy when he was in there trying to man up on him. So it was obvious that the Eagles were trying to take him away, which opened it up for Allen Robinson and some of the other guys. But you would think that he would touch the ball more than four times during the course of a playoff game where, you know, you're desperately looking for a spark.
Hey, Hamp, all year long we were talking about Mitch Trubisky and the jury's out, you know, on what we think of him. And of course, you made it clear early in the season about your displeasure with his play. What do you think of his play yesterday? Do you think that he stepped up and showed that he's the future of the position for the Bears?
Well, if you go back and watch the video, you know, he could have had three picks in the first half. Okay, well, at least two. One guy dropped it in the end zone that my sister could have caught. But at the end of the day, they dropped it. So, you know, so far, so good. But when we got into the position and we talked about this ad nauseum, can this kid be able to bring you from behind in a must-win situation? And you know what? To his credit, he did. He stood up and threw four or five of the best throws of the year under pressure, under duress. And it wasn't, you know, it one was to Bellamy, one was to Robinson, one was to Miller. I mean, the kid showed me an awful lot. And like I said, you know, as we walk away from this crash scene and we say, okay, well, what really can we take away from the 2018 season? Well, you know, Trubisky did make progress. And early on, you know, the thing that really bothered us, especially the great Ed Obradovich, is, hey, I know he's 22 or 23. Last time I checked, this guy's, you know, overseas fighting that are 18, 19, 20. You know, quit coddling this damn kid. Make him understand he has to grow up. He has to be better. Well, he stood up and he made some great throws yesterday. But that doesn't change the fact that when we were down on, what was it, the 23, and he didn't know what to do on second down, and he was looking at the sideline like, what do I need to do? Instead of being, you know, competent enough to realize, hey, we get on the line, we got to kill the ball and stop the clock. And you know, we didn't play him in the preseason. We don't really expect him to, do any heavy lifting. I think it's time we start saying, hey, if you want to be a great football team, this kid's got to show up and play great each and every week, not just sometimes.
All right, so what do they need to do in the offseason, in short? We'll have plenty of time to talk about this, but based on what you saw yesterday, when you have to deliver, you have one job, you got to win playoff games. When you have to deliver, what's one big change you'd make?
Well, so much is yet to be seen. There were some cryptic remarks by the coach about, the coaching staff won't be the same. Now, I don't know what that means other than, there's a real good vibe that they think Vic Fangio will get a head coaching job. Now, if that happens, you can say what you want. And some people have said, well, this is like the 84 season with us where we got close, but, no cigar. The next year we went and did it all. Well, we still had Buddy that next year. Well, Vic Fangio leaving, it would be very similar to the 86 season after the Super Bowl.
Sure. Where bye-bye, Buddy.
We didn't get it done. So, the coaching positions, we have to see what happens. We have to see how it all shakes out. But as far as the personnel, this team has got, a lot of good things they can build around. The receiver's the best I've seen in my lifetime. The running back's competent. The offense, will be okay. The offensive line got better and better. The two tackles, Massey, we'll figure out what we're going to do at right tackle. But, the question mark will be the coordinator and the staff on defense. But the glaring question mark is, what are you going to do with kicker? Think about that. How much of a season, and especially when you have a quarterback where you got to play, the game with him under control, under the range, keep him under control, every point is a premium, and losing by one in the playoffs just exacerbates that and illustrates how important every kick is. And, let's go back to this. Everybody's going, well, this kid, got his hands up and blocked it from the Eagle.
One big fat Eagle finger.
He's 6'3". I watched the film 5 times. The guy barely jumped. I'm just saying, that kick should have been blocked. It should have been batted back in his face if it was that low. This kicker has got a psychological problem. And the last thing we need to be doing is opening up a crisis hotline and having to deal with his touchy-feely problems. Hey, get another kicker. There's a bunch of them. If Robbie Gould is a free agent, hey, everybody can, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor said we made a mistake. They got back together
right.
4 times. Let's see if we can't rekindle a relationship. Robbie Gould has been great, but, hey, for us to have to guilt a kicker into coming down to Soldier Field and practicing during the course of a season, that should have told us right then, this guy, he's not what we need.
Yeah, I'd make the argument, too, that this is too big and too tough a town to, when you have that kind of an ending, to recover from it. So I'm not saying the kid won't have an NFL career. I just don't think it's here. Dave, last word.
Okay, free agency, Hap. Again, it's a long way off. They upgraded the receiving core last year.
Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
How great was he yesterday?
He was terrific yesterday.
Awesome.
But do you need to take another step in that area? I mean, I can't imagine that the former first rounder is going to be back next year. I think he becomes a free agent.
Well, yeah, exactly. And we don't have a first or second round draft pick, so free agency is where we have to go. But I think they spent $270 million in free agent money last year. At some point, all that dries up, and there is a salary cap. And everybody's saying, "Well, we're a young team." Well, you've got a lot of money tied up in a half a dozen players, so it will make it, one of those judicious decisions as you go about trying to improve. But the defense, there's a lot of reasons to believe this defense can still be very good next year. The schedule's going to be tougher. Vic Fangio makes this thing, a lot more doable if he's able to come back. But like I said, I think Nagy knows, and the winds are blowing the way of maybe Vic Fangio getting a head coaching job, maybe in Denver. Who knows?
Well, he deserves it.
If that happens, everything changes.
Listen, Bears fans, cry it out today. Enjoy an amazing season and watch Patrick Mahomes win a Super Bowl.
Or get beat by the Colts.
No, he'll win.
Yeah, I'm doubtful.
Mahomes, my man. My man, Mahomes. Good luck.
Hey guys, real quick, Steve. You know, but and this is almost like one of those life lessons. And you know, Cody Parkey hits the left upright, and it was almost predictable. But then the ball goes down and hits the crossbar. And you know what? That 11-inch long oblong spheroid could have fell backwards across the bar. And we would have been talking about how great the game was and, and you know, how we're going to, you know, enjoy our game against Los Angeles. So, you know, it was a great year, but it all comes to bear on one kick, one moment in time. And unfortunately, you know, the kid wasn't able to, it could have been a Rudy Parkey story instead of a Cody Parkey.
Yeah, and you know, I just listen. I agree with what you said at the outset too. There's a lot of other things that could happen before the game, but that usually is an out for the kicker at the end of the game. And I'm telling you, you got one job. I love kickers. I don't want to kill them. My camp does.
Yeah.
But you've got one job. You have to make that kick.
Was a 43
there's just no
yarder?
Exception. Yeah, 43 yards.
So
by the way,
there's a lot of people talking about clock management, and they could have got closer, but you're like, an NFL kicker is supposed to make a 43
43
yarder.
In 2019, 43 is almost automatic. So
43, the ball's on the 26.
Yep.
Come on. You know, I mean, let's all be real. And you know, in golf analogy, that's a 2.5-foot putt.
Right.
You got to make that.
And Hamp, you know, that. I never miss those.
Never seen it once. So I mean, you need to start your therapy sessions with you know who.
Thank you, buddy. We'll talk to you later on about the rest of the playoffs.
Go Bears. Great year.
Yep, absolutely.
The phrase he used, bird box offense. I find to be very, very hip with pop culture.
He's trendy. Hamp is trendy.
Yeah, he's trending.
Yes, he is.
The bottom line is, this bum has to make that kick. It's a 3-foot putt. You're a professional. You're making $4 million. My God.
The president has some nice comedy going this morning on his Twitter feed, talking about other people lying. God, we got to get him a mirror. At 7:29, Pete Zimmerman is in studio. Pete gets us the most valuable people on the planet every day, and your presence here in studio tells me that this must be someone you have a strong feeling for.
It is.
Who is it?
Someone very close to me.
You?
Mary Vandeveld.
Mary Vandeveld? Oh.
For
what?
For winning.
I'm eating a banana.
For winning fantasy this weekend.
What?
Hey, way to go.
What?
What?
I thought my pick was terrible.
It was. But it turned out that Deshaun Watson.
He scored like one touchdown, or did he score any?
He was like 30 for 50, but, you know.
Yeah, because he fell behind
time,
so much, he threw the
one
ball.
One touchdown, yeah.
Boy, everybody else must have really stunk.
Well, Sandberg's pick off the board here of the 14-14 tie was actually closest to the score.
Yeah,
I was.
That's right.
I was very much so. I'm the co-MVP, is what you're saying?
I don't see that happening.
I am so honored and thrilled. Mary's honored and thrilled, and she was very annoyed when she was bothered on Saturday to have to do a pick.
That's right.
Well, you know, it was my birthday, and you guys are going back and forth.
No, here's what happened. No, here's what happened, because nobody talks anymore. So it's all group texting. So there's a group text that started
so
around
annoying.
9 in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at about 9:30, I decide, well, I'm going to dispense with the entire day of this. And
well,
I threw,
said 1 o'clock was the deadline, right?
I didn't say a deadline.
Oh.
I threw a couple of picks out. Then I casually look at my phone a couple hours later, and suddenly I'm being accused of trashing the entire thing and going out of turn and being kicked out of the league.
It was brutal.
Like it was some plan that I started, some evil plan that I hatched.
You were not just accused, you were convicted of that.
Yeah,
right.
Dave Bennett was the one convicted.
I wasn't convicted, but I was next in line. I was going to draft Philip Rivers. You had already put out there that you were taking Rivers, but it was my pick.
I had a lot going on, Dave. I needed you to respond sometime within 5 hours.
I had a lot going on. It was my birthday.
I volunteered to withdraw my pick so you could have it, even though...
What did I do? It was the gentleman that I am.
No, keep him.
I said, you keep him, and I'll take Y.A. Tittle from the 1961
well,
New York
Times.
Well,
you know what? He probably had a better day. Even though Rivers' team won, I think Y.A. Tittle had a better day.
Well, you tell us. Who had the good days?
Mary, of course.
Uh-huh.
Steve, you had a good day with Russell.
Mm-hmm.
Joe with Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, Andrew Luck, all pretty good days. And then Dave, your mom... with the Cody Parkey pick.
Well, my mom had at least 9 points.
Yeah, Mary Sandberg and Steve Grzanich, who was on a roll for a while, but then he picked Jordan Howard, who
never got the ball.
Was Jordan Howard in the game?
I know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, seemed like a missing person yesterday.
So I did not come in last.
No, you did not come in last.
This is the season end, right? We're done.
Yeah,
now.
We're done now, right?
No, we're not.
The Bears
are
going
to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. We don't care about the other teams.
Okay, is this
okay? Well, feel free to resign the game if you like.
No, I'm on a winning streak.
Okay. I think Dave won the regular season. Mary wins the playoffs.
Oh, this is a new one.
We'll do a new.
Yeah, we had to start over, Dave, because
that's the way it always works.
Steve
Dave
wanted more players to pick from.
So. Regular season. Postseason. We've always done it that way.
No, we haven't.
Yes, we have. Every year.
We have not.
Yes, we have.
As the person
year.
Who ran the wing dang doodle last year, I will say we stopped like with 2 weeks to go.
That's because you didn't tell me that we needed to make picks.
She was tired of it.
I don't care for it, so I just didn't mention
so
it.
So wait, yeah. Is it continuing or not?
It's like you and DeCoste going, don't bring it up and he'll forget.
Hey, John, talk him out of the wing dang doodle, please.
Good Lord.
I think in fairness, we should call it a wrap it up.
Yeah, I like that idea.
I go down with the win.
Oh,
wait.
Then Mary's the win. Then who's the
Hold
winner?
Hold on a second. No, I like Pete. I don't like that idea.
Oh.
Yes. So, no, we're going through the Super Bowl, even if it's just Dave, on. Justin, and me.
Okay. So I get nothing. For winning the regular season,
the pride
title.
Of winning.
You got to pick first every week, Dave. Wasn't that enough?
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't.
Help me out.
You get
no,
bragging rights. Dave, you're the Dave. Regular season champion.
This is like he's Matt Nagy right now at the podium. You had a great regular season,
yes.
Dave. And sorry about your loss.
Yeah. Be excited. Well, and now you have a chance to win the postseason and be a double winner.
Yeah, not after that first pick, though.
All right, later this week we'll make more of this. That's your MVP.
Not in a text, please.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I have exciting scientific news to report this morning. The silent treatment is genetically passed on from generation to generation. It's not just some females. It's all females because the world's greatest grandchild, Abigail Grace, gave me the silent treatment when I left last night after seeing her.
Oh, you're leaving? Oh, okay.
So you're saying she got that from Amy and Maureen?
No, I'm saying she got it from the ancient times.
Oh, okay.
The silent treatment has been passed down genetically from female to female to female. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I have scientific proof.
I'm more of a tell you exactly what I'm thinking type of female.
Right, but you're the one that enjoys children crying, too. So.
I do. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. You get Abigail on Santa's lap with some tears. I'm happy.
Oh, that's not even funny. That's not even remotely funny. Ryan Nobles joins us now. And, Ryan, I have exciting news for you as well. You have the 14 children.
What's that?
I heard over the weekend, and I have not actually taken the time to research this, but someone told me over the weekend, that there is a fake New Year's Eve ball drop that you can find online, sort of like the fake fire in the fireplace.
Yeah.
Oh, you know about this?
Oh, 100%.
It's on Netflix.
My family has long, long taken advantage of the Netflix fake.
Oh, it's a Netflix thing. Oh, see, I don't know about
this. Yes, there are multiple versions of it. So,
you can lie to your children and tell them it's New Year's Eve and tell them it's
the
midnight.
The first year we did it. It ended, and they were like, wow, that was fun. And I went through the Netflix, and I was like, oh, wait, there's like three more of these. You guys want to do a couple more? And they're like, yeah, this is how New Year's Eve works. So it ends up being a win-win for everybody. Yeah, no complaints there.
Drop that ball at 8 p.m., get those kids in bed, and then
you couldn't
relax.
Just go with it's New Year's Eve in Australia at 1 in the afternoon or something, whatever time it is?
That's an option. Maybe we'll try that next year.
What would your father have done? Because my father would have went, get to bed, stupid.
Yeah, suck it up. That's exactly probably what my father would have done. Yeah. We always have the unique thing with my family is that my father's birthday is actually on New Year's Eve. So
there
were always competing celebrations on that day.
Maybe you drop your father at midnight.
There you go.
All right. I noticed some comedy on the Donald Trump Twitter feed this morning where he's accusing others of lying. It's nothing new, but it's always amusing to me because, you know, when the number one says others are doing it, you know. But the big story obviously continues to be a government shutdown, which if it goes through tomorrow will mean that 850,000 government employees will go a month without pay.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that that's a dominating story entering 2019. I think in many ways symbolic of the Trump administration that they would start the second half of this administration with 30% of the government shut down. I mean, there's a lot of anxiety in Washington, and I'm not just talking about members of Congress and our political leaders. In fact, I would almost argue that there's not enough anxiety with that group. But, you know, as somebody who lives in, you know, federal worker rich Northern Virginia, the people I'll walk the kids to school with this morning and friends that we had over last night, I mean, it's impossible to go anywhere here without meeting or talking to somebody who's specifically impacted by this in some way, shape, or form. Even if they're not necessarily a furloughed worker, they know somebody who's a furloughed worker. Or, for instance, a friend we had over last night works at the Pentagon and is involved in contracting. And so, you know, the work that he does extends to parts of the government that are furloughed or shut down. So it's just going to resonate in big ways. You know, let me give you one example, Steve, of the real-world impact of this. Just a Facebook group that my wife is a member of here in Northern Virginia, where there was a single mom really concerned about her child care situation, not because she needed someone to watch her kid because she's not going to have to go to work, but, you know, the daycare market here, as I'm sure it is in Chicago, is very tight.
Sure.
The margins are very slim. If she stops sending her kid to daycare, she loses her spot. She's got to queue back up and get on a waiting list. She can't afford to keep her kid in the daycare because she's not going to get a check on Friday. So she's got to make the decision of, does she cut somewhere else? Does she, you know, put it on a credit card to send her kid to a daycare system that she doesn't actually need because she doesn't have to go to work? But if she loses that spot, it's going to end up costing her a lot more. So that's just one example of the things that the federal workers here are dealing with on a daily basis.
There's good reporting, great reporting, frankly, over the weekend that in the big picture, it doesn't matter as much as how this story ends. And that is that the Trump administration had no idea this would get this serious and had no idea the problems they were causing. And also that Trump himself didn't think immigration was that big a deal because he kept forgetting it on a campaign trail and during speeches and had to be tricked into talking about it. Those are all cute stories, anecdotal stories. Neither one surprises me. What does surprise me is that there's no give in this thing to save it by tomorrow. Do you see any way this ends by tomorrow?
No, no way. No, it's not going to end. I mean, you know, our reporting this morning is that, you know, we're talking about weeks, not days. I mean, this could go on and on. And here's the biggest problem, Steve, to the point that you're making right now. President Trump doesn't know what he wants in this scenario. It is impossible to negotiate with someone that is asking for kind of an esoteric symbol as opposed to something tangible, specifically when you're talking about federal budgeting. So for him to say, well, I want $5 billion, and I just want you to give me these $5 billion, and then I'm going to decide what to do with them later. Maybe I'll do steel slats. Maybe I'll do a fence. Maybe I'll do a beaded curtain, as Nancy Pelosi joked. That's an impossible way to negotiate. And, you know, the simple fact of the matter remains that he's had funding in previous budgets to begin this process and hasn't done so. You know, he keeps changing the conversation as to exactly what his ultimate goals are. And at the end of the day, this is starting to become to look more and more just like a political posturing trick to keep his base fired up as the Democrats now take control of the House and he can create Nancy Pelosi as a foil that's ruining his agenda from day one. You know, not to say that the Democrats are willing to give it all in this, because there's no signs that they are, but it would be a lot easier for them to give if they knew specifically what the president wasn't looking for, not just like a check for $5.5 billion that who knows what he's going to do with it.
Hey, Ryan, locally, in the last couple of years, we saw here in the state of Illinois a budget showdown similar to our own sort of partial shutdown. But what happened was there was a lot of mitigating the risk. You saw that government employees were still getting paid, and you saw it just meant that the regular taxpayer in the state of Illinois didn't feel what was happening with the budget showdown down in Springfield. It seems very similar with the federal government. And over the weekend, seeing that the Trump administration was trying to do little moves to deal with some of the things that were popping up, some of the trouble spots, even some calling them illegal moves, it seems to be the same thing. But at the end of the day, the governor who was in charge of that was removed from office. He lost in a landslide. There has to be a political calculus here for the Trump administration to recognize that these kind of showdowns, especially when they start mitigating risk here and there, are never popular.
They're never popular for anybody. that's what I find so amazing about all this, Justin, and I think you articulated it very well, that what the federal government can't seem to get through its sick head is that it doesn't matter how many times you do this, voters hate it. And they end up hating both sides. Nobody feels better about a shutdown. There's nothing instructive about the process. It ends up frustrating people and making them upset. And what is so shocking from Donald Trump's perspective is that he came into office as the deal maker, the guy that was going to prevent things like this from happening from his shrewd negotiating skills. And I guess this is really the only tool that he has in his toolbox, because this is the third shutdown that he's had since he got elected. And I do think that it's kind of frustrating to see exactly what these politicians hope for their ultimate outcome, because, you know, it's almost like they are, you know, burning down the house in a way to save something in the backyard, because it becomes such a damaging, destructive way to govern. And, you know, essentially, I go back to this friend that I had over here last night that knows a lot about federal budgeting. He said to me, he goes, they are spending way more every single day to pay for this shutdown than the $5 billion that President Trump is looking for this wall that he's talking about. So it is, you know, there are enormous consequences to all of this, and it does not, you don't get that sense of urgency from the folks in Washington that they want to find a solution.
Well, you know, I agree with your central take in that it's impossible to negotiate with someone who doesn't know what they want, but I think we all know what Trump wants. Trump wants a win. And damn the torpedoes to get the
right
win. Because none of this is about what's right for the country. None of this is about truth. None of this is about facts. The Democrats are making it just as political. And people are suffering. And the country suffers in the larger way because of it. So if the president of the United States, you have to have his signature, and all he'll move forward on is if it's a win, who is there to try to convince him that it's a win to take less?
Well, I think that's the one thing, and you mentioned the Democrats not engaging on that, and I do believe that I think probably most Americans are blaming President Trump for this, but there is a level of blame that goes to Democrats. I mean, this is a process, right? The governing process means that both sides have to be a party to this, and if the president doesn't want to do something, the Democrats have got to figure out a way to come to some sort of resolution. They just can't be implacable like they are now. And, you know, I talked to a couple of senators the week of the shutdown, before it all went down. These were Democratic senators who weren't in leadership, who said to me privately, they said, why don't we just go to Donald Trump and give him a counteroffer? Say, sure, you can have $5 billion. We'll call it border security, but we won't put limitations on it. But included in that is you got to have a pathway for some sort of legal status for the Dreamers, the DACA kids. And then we also want a Mueller protection bill. Throw that on his desk and say, here's your border wall, or what you've defined as your border wall is at this current moment. And then give us these things, and then make him be the one that's saying no to it. You know, the one thing that the president is somewhat inartfully, but he's successfully done, is he's put the ball back in the Democrats' court. The Democrats have not served back anything yet. You know, Nancy Pelosi this week, they're going to pass basically the same bills that they passed before the new year, and then put it back in Mitch McConnell's lap. But, you know, I think some hard-knuckle negotiating where they go in front of the cameras and say, these are the things that we offered the president. Hey, why would he not be concerned about protecting the Mueller investigation if he's done nothing wrong, which puts him in a weird position? And then B, he said before that he wants the DACA kids to be protected, so let's protect them, and we'll build his wall. And this will be a win-win for everybody. You don't see the Democrats making a move like that right now. And I do think their rank and file is a little frustrated by that, because they feel like their leadership is playing unnecessary hardball.
Once again, your government leading us all to a lower spot. It's a lose-lose. Thank you, buddy.
All right. Hey, thanks, you guys have a great week. And sorry about the Bears. Now you know what it's like to be a Buffalo Bills fan.
Well, not entirely. That's Ryan Nobles, and he's great.
Right, and you know,
from CNN.
We had Senator Durbin on not too long ago, and we asked him that same question that Ryan posed. And Durbin's response was, we already did that. And Trump walked. We tried to put DACA on the table. We tried to put everything. We gave him the money, and he walked away. He wouldn't compromise.
Well, that was that meeting in the Oval Office where Durbin walked in with Lindsey Graham, and there were 12 hardcore Trump non-negotiators who had got to him ahead of time, and then he changed his mind again.
Mm-hmm.
It's really working well.
Hawk a riddle, yeah, come on.
I read a riddle. You be the first correct caller. You win.
I'm surprised we're getting this riddle
read because you and Justin have been going at it about the Bears during the break.
What are we going at it? We're just having a discussion.
Discussion.
That's all.
Healthy.
Justin was on his feet.
Well, Justin's been talking about the Bears since last night when he ripped his jersey off and threw it at his family.
I did. I wish I had a camera and I would have made it to Deadspin.
Pair of tickets to see the Hawks play the Preds Wednesday night, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingAndCooling.com. Four Seasons tickets all season long. Their givers, your takers, Rokan and Anna have a second chance to win this afternoon at 4:40. First correct caller that knows the answer to what I'm talking about when I say this. He opened his doors on St. Patty's Day, an upper crust shop with a buttery way. Skokie was first in 71 with dishes so deep, 55 stores from one. What is it?
I know this one.
Congratulations. You can't win. Back with that winner in a moment. Dean coming up, too. Got to talk about this R. Kelly mess, too, coming up on 720 WGN. And Steve will be in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Looks like a winner is Alyssa in Plainfield. Alyssa, what was I talking about?
You were talking about Lou Malnati's pizza.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Congratulations. Is she won a Lou Malnati's pizza? Oh, we should throw that in as well. Along with tickets to the Hawks. Awesome. You get the Hawks tickets. Wednesday night. Who are you taking to the game?
Well, my new husband.
Oh, congratulations.
When did you get married?
Thank you. December 14th.
Congratulations. Oh, You're not even a month in.
This is almost like a wedding gift.
This is so cool.
Is it still magical?
It's still magical, yes.
Well, God bless you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, hold the line if you would. Again, thank you. Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
Maddie's is so good.
It is good. All right, Joe, what am I doing?
You're going to news.
I am? Let's go to the newsroom right now. I've got it.
You're like Trubisky looking to the sidelines. Should I spike it? Should I call a timeout?
Oh, that drove me nuts. That drove me nuts. It's like, come on, man.
I'm a little baby deer. I don't know what to do.
Steve Cochran Show, celebrating the most valuable person on the planet, weekday mornings at 7:20.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Live, Channel 9, good morning, Dave.
Good morning to you, Steve.
My fellow moron, Moron Entertainment.
People all the time, I'm at the grocery store, I'm at the dry cleaners, wherever I am, people come up to me and go, hey, moron.
Right. It's that kind of tribute that, it makes it worth getting up
very
in the morning.
Touching. It's like winning a Golden Globe.
Yeah, and I want to get to the Golden Globes.
Except interesting.
I want to get to the Golden Globes because you have to watch it so we don't have to. But what a day yesterday. We had the violence of the NFL, the violence of the NHL with the Blackhawks, the ass-kissing of the Golden Globes. I mean, it was a full day for me.
You're exhausted, aren't you?
Yeah, I really am. Really am. All right.
If you want to ask Chaplips, please bring it to Steve right away. Chapstick, whatever you call it.
The big surprise was what?
I think that A Star Is Born did not win any of the major categories last night. Everybody, including myself, predicted A Star Is Born would win Best Picture Drama, even though it's mostly musical. That's the category it was in. Everybody thought that Bradley Cooper would win Best Actor. Everybody thought Lady Gaga would win Best Actress. And they won none of those major awards. They wound up going home with only one award, Best Original Song, which is still good, but it did not sweep the awards as we thought that it was. Not that I think that this is going to be indicative of what happens at the Oscars. The Golden Globes are always quite different than the Oscars, but at least for last night, Green Book did much better than anyone thought. It actually took home more awards than anyone else, three of them, one for Best Motion Picture, a musical or comedy, which it's neither of those two things. These categories are crazy.
Right. Who determines the category?
The people who enter their movie or TV show. Hmm. But Green Book is not even remotely a comedy.
No.
Or musical. How that's in, how they allowed that to be in that category is beyond me. The producers wisely thought, let's enter it in this category, we'll have a better chance of winning. And it turns out that they were correct. They also won Best Screenplay, and Mahershala Ali won for Best Supporting Actor. I would argue that he was a lead actor in that movie.
Right. Yeah, well, this is the problem when you have drunken Frenchmen organizing this award show.
The Hollywood Foreign Press.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I will say this. I rewatched The Star is Born this weekend. Still love it. I hate the ending. Boy, do I hate the ending. But I think it's the best thing Bradley Cooper's ever done.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of acting and the fact that he's a first-time director and he put together this magnificent movie. I don't know what happened, except that the Hollywood Foreign Press Association really seemed to also like Bohemian Rhapsody. I did say with my predictions that there was a lot of buzz about Bohemian Rhapsody, the Freddie Mercury movie.
Well, you know the drunken French.
And I,
if you guys were part of the foreign press, I assume you'd be French?
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I would like to vote for the book Vert.
The book de green.
I call it Le Bibliothèque Vert.
Oh, I think I pulled something.
Green book.
That's exactly right. And that's why when you have these kind of conversations, nobody knows who the hell you're voting for, and other movies win.
That's exactly right. But so worthy, Bohemian Rhapsody, which is a spectacular movie, it won Best Picture drama, even though it's not really a drama. It's more of a musical to me. And Rami Malek, who was so amazing as Freddie Mercury, I think very deservedly so, won Best Actor drama last night. And Glenn Close from the movie The Wife. Did you see that? It kind of came and went quickly here in Chicago. It was a little small independent film.
Yeah, I've got the screener. I haven't watched it yet. I suppose I should, though.
Right? She is spectacular. She's better than the movie.
You know what was cool last night?
Is when she interesting film.
Her speech, her acceptance speech was great, but when she won, there's a moment where Michael Douglas leans into the aisle and kisses her on the cheek. And you're thinking, Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, how about that?
And he's 76, 7, whatever he is. She's 71. It's like, where did all that time go? Yeah. Holy mackerel.
I thought you were going to say Fatal Attraction because Amy Adams' looks could kill. She was expecting to win. Did you think, Dean, that Amy should have won, or did you like the Glenn Close?
I thought that Gaga actually should have won.
Oh, Gaga.
Myself. Amy Adams, I mean, they were all quite good. Everybody was, you know, whoever won, whoever wound up winning deserved it. They were all extremely talented and qualified. I personally thought that Gaga was spectacular. I'm perfectly happy that Glenn Close wound up winning that.
Great speech, too, if you get a chance to see that today. We'll come back and play some sound from that. I just want to ask you about the R. Kelly documentary, which is out.
I also want to know about the Fiji Water Girl.
The Fiji Water Girl stole the show last night.
I have information on the Fiji Water
Girl.
She
stole the red carpet.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
8:25, Dean talking about the Golden Globes.
Also known as the worst award show that I've seen in recent memory. In memory, period. Memory.
Yeah, bad host, too.
Terrible show.
Bad host, bad, 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 bad.
Andy Samberg, Sandra Oh, if you see them on the street.
Yell at them.
Let's get right to Fiji Girl.
I was going to say punch him in the face, but yeah, you're yelling at him. Yell at him.
Yeah, what was the deal with the Fiji Girl?
All right, well, I wasn't going to start there, but since you two have hijacked the show,
yeah,
the Fiji Water Girl, what's the deal?
So on the red carpet, you know, photographers are taking pictures of all the stars that are coming in, and we started to notice a trend that the girl who was serving Fiji water to the stars that are walking in, she's in every single picture. It's a very attractive brunette in a beautiful blue dress.
In a tray with square water bottles all over it.
Square water bottles all over it, so the stars can stay hydrated in their exhausting 50-foot walk from the car to inside the building at the Beverly Hilton Hotel.
From their limo.
Did you see anybody take a swig of one of those, though?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. No, she was legit serving water to people. But, everyone thought, is this just a coincidence that she happens to be in every picture? Not a coincidence at all, as it turns out. She is a model by the name of Kelleth Cuthbert. who...
What? Do you need dental work? What's her name?
Kenneth Cuthbert.
Kenneth Cuthbert.
Thuffering fuckatash.
Kenneth. How do you spell Kenneth?
K-E-L-L-E-T-H.
Yeah.
Kenneth Cuthbert.
It's not a
C-U-T-H-B-E-R-T is her name. She's a model, and she Instagrammed a very provocative pose on the red carpet by herself with nobody else in it. Not the worst way to spend a Sunday afternoon. So she very intentionally got herself... She had the eye on the camera. She knew exactly
I like how she hashtagged herself Fiji Water Girl on that
Fiji
post
Water
on her Instagram.
Girl.
Who's she related to?
Is she, well, there's a Cuthbert that played...
Alicia
on 24?
Cuthbert. Yeah, on 24. Is she related?
I don't know.
She played the daughter in 24.
I don't know, but all I know is that she'll be the next Mary Poppins.
Well, in typical Hollywood fashion, Dean, we just received word she's got a 6-episode commitment for her own Fiji Water Girl show.
People were you know, tweeting about her, and somebody said that Ryan Murphy had signed her to a TV movie series about the Fiji Water Girl.
I see nothing about a sibling of Alicia's, just so we know. So
well, you know, the Cuthbert.
She spells it with a C, and the Kenneth spells it with a K.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go.
Well, no, Kenneth is with a K, but Cuthbert is...
Cuthbert with a C,
I'm glad we're getting to the bottom of this. All right, let me get some sound out of you. Carol Burnett, what was she talking
about? I thought she was the highlight of the show, to tell you the truth. She won the first ever Lifetime Achievement Award for television that they gave out that was named after her, the first ever Carol Burnett Award for all of her achievements in television. Here's a little of what she had to say.
I'm really gobsmacked by this. Does this mean I get to accept it every year? Sometimes I catch myself daydreaming about being young again and doing it all over. And then I bring myself up short when I realize how incredibly fortunate I was to be there at the right time.
Amen.
We all became one happy family for 11 joy-filled years. And nothing like our show, and I might add other variety shows at the time, could ever be see the light of day today because the networks, they just wouldn't spend the money. And because there are so many cable competitors, they're not going to take a chance. And sad to say, today's audiences might never know what they're missing. So, here's to reruns and YouTube.
Very cool.
But I'm just happy that our show happened when it did. And that I can look back and say once more, I am so glad we had this time together. Thank you.
Wow.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Great is that?
Look up the whole speech.
She did the ear tug.
YouTuber Water Dish. She gave an ear tug, but her speech was thoughtful and eloquent and elegant.
Very cool.
And absolutely lovely.
She was better than the Fiji Water Girl.
She was. I'm surprised the Fiji Water Girl didn't work herself into that. Do we have time for one more?
Yeah, I want to hear Christian Bale, because you need to explain about the controversy post-Christian Bale that's blown up on Twitter. Oh, and by the way, I just got pictures of Kenneth Cuthbert here. I'm certainly hoping this Fiji Water thing blows up and she's able to afford clothes, because she's in a lot of bra and panties here. She apparently can't afford sweater and pants. So I'm hoping this is a good move for her.
Steve, you know, she lives in California. It's not as cold as it is here. So.
All right. So Christian Bale, one of the greats, plays Dick Cheney in Cheney. A little bit of Christian Bale, Joe, if you would.
Thank you to that geezer over there, Adam. He said, I've got to find somebody who can be absolutely charisma-free and reviled by everybody. So he went, that's got to be Bale in it. You know, thank you. And for all the competition, I will be cornering the market on charisma-free. What do you think? Mitch McConnell next? That could be good, couldn't it? Thank you to Satan for giving me inspiration on how to play this role.
I mean, he just let it fly. And then on Twitter, a billion tweets going, what's with the English accent?
You know, it's sort of, I mean, that's his regular accent.
But nobody seemed to know.
What's why he has an accent?
Yeah, there were literally thousands of people going, well, why is he talking like that?
Did they want him to talk like Batman?
Yeah, they did.
I guess so, yeah.
Thank Satan for his inspiration. That's the controversy that I'm reading about, is
you're
that in a fairly non-political night, that that was the only really political thing that happened last night. And it's a movie about, you know, Dick Cheney. So I don't know. I didn't give Christian Bale a breathalyzer test. But I do know at this awards ceremony, there is lots of alcohol that's served to the people. And sometimes you get unpredictable moments as a result of that. I'm not saying that that's what happened to Christian Bale. But
it's possible.
It was rather freewheeling.
Dean, speech. Did you predict Christian Bale? Is that who you picked?
I did. Okay. I did predict Christian Bale.
And it's a great movie. Some of you may hate it, but you should watch it anyway. By the way, speaking of dicks, Dick Van Dyke was unbelievable. Dick Van Dyke goes up and does a presenter role at 94, 5, whatever he is now. And there's a great moment where he's just making fun of the fact that he doesn't know any of the new people. And he goes, I came in, I saw Carol Burnett. I thought, whoa, I know her.
I was so happy to see him. I was hoping he might dance or something, but he did come on stage with a cane. So, you know, maybe he's feeling a little.
Hey, I never asked you this. Is there a reason Julie Andrews didn't do a cameo in the new one?
Julie Andrews has said that she did not want to distract against Emily Blunt, that she wanted this to be Emily Blunt's movie, and she felt like
very classy.
Her doing anything in this movie would have been too much of a distraction.
Very classy. All right, I don't want to end on a down note, but this R. Kelly story is really big.
It's so weird.
R. Kelly, Surviving R. Kelly's a documentary. Chance the Rapper said he's sorry he ever worked with him. A lot of people are coming out this morning saying the same thing.
Did you watch any of it over the weekend?
I couldn't watch a lot of it, frankly.
I mean, thought you were going to ask him if he ever worked with R. Kelly.
I did, twice. And I regret it.
I believe I can fly.
R. Kelly is accused of essentially kidnapping women and engaging in horrible sex acts that they didn't want to be involved in. Is there still no criminal charges that could be filed here?
Well, you know, he was acquitted. He did go to court, and he was acquitted.
But there's new people in this thing.
Of charges. There are really, according to Jim DeRogatis, who used to be the music critic at The Sun-Times, he's now a music writer for BuzzFeed, and has been following this story for decades. Jim DeRogatis has done most of the journalism work on this story. Mm-hmm. Jim says that he really did not see very much new in this whole thing. Because he knows all of the ins and outs of this whole thing. It's people who are accusers, people who say there were survivors, people who claim to have inside information. Jim says all the information that he saw in this multi-part documentary out there are things which were already known. His big question is, where the hell is the state's attorney on this?
Yeah.
Where's the Chicago police? Where's the Olympia Fields police? Why isn't there some action that's being taken? And, you know, there's one of the things that I never knew that I saw in this documentary was the allegation that R. Kelly's people were tipped off by police any time that the police would show up to do a wellness check on his studio, on his homes, on his apartments. So, you know, they never found anything wrong because what the allegation is that they were tipped off before the police ever got there, that the police were coming.
Yeah, it's an awful story.
So it's just the whole thing is horrible. What's going to come next from this? Hopefully some legal action, some actual legal action that's going to come out of this. But all that's out there, all that's in this documentary, Jim says that's pretty much the status of the status quo of what we know about this case.
And
now,
Jim's right. I edited Jim DeRogatis for a couple of years, and he is absolutely right. There are stories that would come out, people who would come forward, then disappear. And you would read these harrowing reports or these interviews of people who
disappear because they were paid off.
Or they didn't want to tell the story anymore. Maybe they were paid off, but you know, whatever it might be, it was eye opening for me to be in the room in some of those discussions. It was it's a huge story, and I think a lot of Chicagoans know it because of the trial and everything that happened a couple of years ago. But this is seems like this documentary is really for a national audience.
Well, then hopefully it'll create some stir and go where Dean talked about.
Seems a little bit opportunistic for me. Also, several of the people who are on the show have book deals. They stand to make a lot of money on all of this. Where were you when the trial was going on? Where was all of this information and people coming forward when the trial was going on?
Who has the book deals? Victims?
Not when there's a book deal. Some of the survivors and some of the people who are being featured on the show alleging that they were treated a certain way by R. Kelly.
Well, it's a pretty business, isn't it? Anyway, R. Kelly sounds like he ought to be in jail based on what we do know, and at least ought to face a trial and have to stand up for what he's being accused of. And hopefully it's not too late. Thank you, man.
You're very welcome. the Hollywood Foreign Press Golden Globe Report.
Have another cocktail.
In a left center field and deep. This is a tie ball game. 1-1 pitch.
He's not just a head of fabulous hair. He's one of the greatest to ever play the game. And you can go on a little trip with Rhino. Ryan Sandberg joins us now. Good morning to you and Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year. Good morning to you guys.
So every time I drive on the tri-state, I can't go more than 15 feet without seeing Urlacher or you, and I'm tired of it.
Well, you know what? I get tired of a hair blow drying my hair and getting all the haircuts I'd have to get.
Typical of you to mock a bald guy.
Yeah, you know what? There was a Restore here locally. It did a terrific job with that, and very pleased. And so, you know what? I don't mind looking at it, to be honest with you.
You look great. You look great. I'm glad that all worked out. I'll get to your trip here in just a second, but, you know, I assume you watched the Bears game yesterday.
Yeah, that was too bad, you know. What a season, and... the city really, really grabbed hold of the team, and really, I think they're a very likable bunch, very young, athletic. They played some good football, and it was about time because, you know, the Chicago fans are really chomping at the bit to go to Soldier Field and watch the Bears play and postseason. But yeah, to have it come down to that kind of a play. Not only hitting the upright, but hitting the crossbar, I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Well, 84-85. You know, win a couple, go to San Diego. You know, there's a lot of heartbreak, and I'm sure some of it felt familiar.
Yeah, in some regards, but you know what? On the Bears' part of it, it was a great season. They have good players, young players, so it's just a stepping stone year for them, so it's going to be fun to watch them in the future. Spring training right around the corner with the Cubs. A little bit quiet as far as making moves to this point, but they have a very good roster and a team that won 95 games in place. Still young players, and still waiting to see if there's some type of a splash to be done. You know, the Cubs that... The front office, they're just so smart, and they oftentimes do things that not surprise me, but I think are brilliant. So just wait to see what's happening there, and once again, I'll be out there at spring training for the 6 weeks.
Dave Ennett's here, so I had to run.
Hey, Rhino, good morning. Are you surprised at all that the free agent market has gotten off to such a sluggish start for the second year in a row?
You mean overall, not
overall.
Just the Cubs.
Now, I'm not talking about the Cubs in particular, but just the big names haven't signed.
Well, it's you know what? Maybe it's the money that they're talking about. And obviously the goal of any team as the Cubs is to win a World Series. And a lot of money on one player kind of straps them for some years, some teams. And sometimes they don't want to go that route. So... We'll see what happens with the Harpers and the Machados to see what has to happen for them to get a job, whether the price tag comes down or if somebody gets after it right at the end and makes a big splash. But you know, like we saw the Cubs, what it took for the Cubs to win in 16 was a group of players playing together, playing the game the right way, and it was no one player. Winning that. So that's what it takes to win, and that's the goal of the major league clubs, obviously.
Hey, Rhino, you know, so much made about position players in 2018, 2019, that they can move. A second baseman can be a third baseman. Manny Machado could play shortstop or third base. There seems to be a lot of movement around the diamond, and the Cubs are a good example of that with Javi Baez and being able to play different positions. You know, with your career, and you played different positions in the diamond, is that an easy thing to do for an athlete, or is that take a lot of skill?
No, it takes a lot of skill. I don't know if that would have been good for me. I really don't. I just wanted to do my pregame warm up at second base and be ready to play that position as best I could at top notch. players today a little bit more flexible with the with that attitude and the way that baseball is. They don't mind. They don't mind. They want to get in the lineup, and it seems to be a very, very valuable tool for players to be able to play more than one position. Just allow the managers more freedom on who's swinging the bat, or who gets a day off, where they play. And I believe with today's player, I think it does create a little bit of uncertainty and excitement in the clubhouse and with the players, where they don't get tired of the grind. Maybe as much as back in the day, where it was a little bit more of the. I mean, it was the guys playing the same position every day, and everybody in the lineup every day in the same spot. And I think the other big difference in this era is the talent that's on the bench. A lot of the guys with the Cubs could be starters elsewhere on other teams, but they happen to come up through the Cubs organization or through a trade. They're on the Cubs. And they're versatile players that are on the bench, and when they're in the lineup, there's no big step down on talent. So I think that's a big difference than in my era, where the bench guys were a step down on the talent level.
Ryan, I know we're going to talk about your trip, and if I just switch gears from baseball, one of our staff members thinks they had a celebrity sighting of you back on Saturday, November 24th. Were you at the Kris Kringle Market?
Absolutely.
All right, now here's the thing, Rhino. Now this is important, Rhino. This is important to make a note
of. He's so excited. Do you see him in the producer booth? Pete is so excited.
Pete Zimmerman, yeah.
Polite interaction with anybody famous is an important thing, and this individual was afraid to say hi to you. And you, I say you're a very approachable guy, even with your new hair.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. And my family and I, and we have 9 grandkids now, Margaret and I do, so we take in all the sights and scenes that Chicago has to offer, but, you know, I enjoy a handshake or a wave to fans. So a lot of fans do come up to me and
nice.
And I have no problem with that.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, Pete Zimmerman's here. Pete's the guy that saw you and didn't want to approach you. Pete, you're going to go on the trip now with Rhino and Margaret.
Thank you. Do you recall being stared at by an old guy who was holding an eggplant at the Kris Kringle Market on that Saturday?
Now that you mention it, there was one awkward moment.
Yeah, that was it. Mr. Awkward.
Yeah. Boy, when you've got Ryan Sandberg calling you Mr. Awkward, that is like, you got to keep that.
You've made it. You finally made it. Join Margaret and Ryan Sandberg for some of the best of Southern and Western Ireland's most scenic and historic spots. It's May 11th through the 18th, so it's coming up. Round trip nonstop airfare. We're here to Dublin on Aer Lingus. Professional drivers and guides and luxury coach service get you around. You'll visit the Cliffs, the old Middleton Distillery, the Guinness Storehouse, the Dingle Peninsula, which, by the way, is one of my names when I danced.
I remember that, yeah.
And 4 rounds of golf at Lahinch, one of the greats. Lahinch at Ballybunion's fabulous. Tralee, Portmanic, just fabulous golf. Full Irish breakfast each day, and all of that with you, Ryan Sandberg, on May 11th through 18th. It's a Steve Bertrand trip.
Yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be great. I have been to Scotland, where I played 9 rounds of golf in 10 days, which was a lot. But this is going to be a fun trip in May. The Cubs are out of town most of that time, so we're not going to miss on too many home Cubs games. But looking forward to some great golf and see Ireland at its best. And like what you mentioned, everything lined up with the drivers and the ground service and everything. And it's straight O'Hare to Dublin, so Margaret and I are looking forward to hosting a group over there, and it should be a lot of fun.
Go to SteveBertrandTravel.com, SteveBertrandTravel.com, and go hang out with Rhino.
There you go.
And say hi to his hair. As you can tell, Rhino, I'm bitter. hey, listen, thanks for jumping on. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you during season.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks,
there you go. Thanks, Rhino.
I love that one of the things you can do is full Irish breakfast. If you're familiar, that's the half tomato.
Blood sausage or something.
It's a lot of beans.
Yeah, and a big pig on a spit.
I think he was showing off that he's got 9 grandkids to Steve.
I like the fact that he goes, well, there's not too many home games I'll miss. You're going to Ireland. Relax. talking with Rhino, and we don't know where the big money guys are going to end up, obviously, but the White Sox have money to spend as well, and we certainly would like to see that. I did a quick baseball search here for salaries, and Dave, you remember this, in 1861 from the Cincinnati Redlegs, the Red Stockings?
One of my favorite all-time years.
Harry Wright was the most expensive player in baseball. He made $2,500 for that year. Hank Greenberg was the first $100,000 player.
Yep.
Kurt Flood. None of the new money happens without Kurt Flood.
Correct.
Everybody in baseball should say thank you to Kurt Flood.
Challenge the reserve clause.
Catfish Hunter made $400,000. They thought, it's never going to get any higher than this. Kirby Puckett, the first to $3 million in 89. Sandberg signed a 4-year, $28 million deal in 92. Now, it was incentive laden. It never got to that number.
I don't remember signing that deal.
Yes, not you, Sandberg. Ryan Sandberg.
Oh.
I can't believe Dahl didn't pay you that. You were certainly worth it. And A-Rod was a $300 million man. But now, $30 million a season, there's four or five guys that are going to make that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's unbelievable. So that's why I think...
But I tell you what, Harry Wright was overpaid.
You thought so?
I thought so. Yeah.
And a diva. Come on, come on, come on, little shop. Our old friend Nancy O'Dell, we're trying to track her down. She may be sleeping it off after the Golden Globes.
No way. She's still partying.
You think so?
I think she's still at the after.
Did you ever go to any of the award shows?
Oh, absolutely not.
I was at the Oscars. And
look at you.
It ends, in L.A. time, 8:30, 8:45. I don't know how the people do the all-night parties, because by 5 a.m., it's almost a 12-hour party.
That's a long time.
It's an insane amount
of time.
That's
how you bounce from party to party to party, right?
That's what Elton was saying as we got in the car. So, do we have her? Oh, we do. Okay, good. We love Nancy O'Dell, and she has not slept a wink. She was up working. I assume you haven't slept. Did you sleep at all?
A few hours. Not very many. In fact, I'm sitting here on my couch right now. You can see me. I'm just sprawled out on the couch, like lying down, talking to you.
You know what's so funny? I insist.
Should I, in between talking to you?
Well, feel free to doze off during the interview if you need to.
That'd be a great interview, wouldn't it?
Right, exactly. All right, number one takeaway from last night was what?
Well, I love talking to Lady Gaga, and her dress was phenomenal, so that was a lot of fun, I have to say. So I don't know if that was the number one takeaway, but it was a lot of fun. I guess kind of got a Gaga over Gaga.
She's
it was
the
just
best.
Entertaining to talk to her, and the fashion was unbelievable.
Do you talk to her a lot, Nancy, like often?
I have talked to her many times over the course of all the different things that she's done, and she's always entertaining. I have to say, I think you have a different impression of her on stage than you do when you actually have conversations with her, because she has this very warmth about her when you do interviews with her, and she's a lot of fun. So it's fun to talk to her about meeting Bradley Cooper for the first time, and when they first met and the chemistry between them and how he came over to her house and she cooked him spaghetti and meatballs and the chemistry they had and her talking about not only thinking that he was an incredible director and being flattered that she was his lead actress in his first movie that he was a director in, but the great human being that she has found him to be. And it was nice to hear her talk about him as a human being.
Well, there's a great balance there, right? Because he had never sung in the way he sings in that movie. She had never acted in the way she acts in that film. So they served each other
exactly.
Well.
Exactly. The vulnerability of both of them, Like, that's what I said. Now they got like a Grammy nomination. She got him his first Grammy nomination, and he was the director for her her acting kind of. So it was a nice little combination there. It's really cool, and I thought the movie was fantastic. So I was a little disappointed that they didn't walk away with more last night.
Yeah, me too. We haven't talked about fashion at all this morning, other than the Fiji Water Girl, who we believe has been offered multiple series this morning by Hollywood producers. Any other dresses pop for you?
Well, I loved it, Lady Gaga. Like I said, that was just phenomenal because it was like this gorgeous, long, blue dress that was just a statement shocker. I love Nicole Kidman's wine dress. It's just, she makes anything look good. She's so tall and statuesque. I thought it was phenomenal. Sandra Oh's red dress, I thought it was beautiful on her and just it made such a statement as well. So I thought nobody made a real big fashion miss. I like Julia Roberts.
Oh, I love that outfit.
Yes. With the pants.
The pants
Did you
and the
like
nude,
it?
Yeah, the, with the nude, like, what do you call that? that train behind her. It looked awesome.
Yes, it was so pretty and different.
And comfortable.
So funny, because when she first walked up, I said, I like your jumpsuit. She goes, it's not a jumpsuit. I was like, being corrected by Julie Roberts. I was like, I guess it's really not a jumpsuit. It was more like a dress with pants on. Yeah,
I saw that Kaylee Cuoco, she said she was just happy to be wearing pockets as well. She had pockets in her skirt.
Yeah, oh, I know. That one, too.
I put all kinds of snacks in it.
What about all the women?
Okay, well, that's good.
The women who all wear the low cut, and most of them, I hate to say, are the flat-chested ones when you look at them, and they're all wearing those dresses, and I'm just getting kind of tired of those dresses. Anybody else? I know they're all taped up.
No, it's good for the boob tape business.
But they don't have them. They don't, you know.
Okay,
they're lacking. But then they have the low, and then they're all shiny. A lot of the women were very shiny up there.
Well, it was low-cut night, wasn't it? Halle Berry and everybody?
And somebody else was busting out big time. I forgot who it was that it got an award.
Patricia Arquette.
Oh, yes. Yes, Patricia Arquette. Whoa.
So is that the new trend, or boobs back?
I don't know if that's the big trend or not. I don't know.
When Gwyneth Paltrow won her Oscar, her dress was low cut. I like the low cut dresses personally. And everyone's got a good spray tan going now, so everyone's
that's
like,
what
like
it is.
Glistening.
They're all glowing. Yes.
Yeah, they're all like glistening.
What about the dudes? You know, the dudes, we're all stuck in the same rental tuxedos, because those are all rentals. I don't know if you know that.
So I thought last night the guys actually stepped out. That was one thing I said it needs to be on the show tonight, on Entertainment Tonight, because I thought the guys actually stepped out of the box last night. You know, there was some color in the tux. There was like a little different variety as far as the tux. It was like Darren Criss, like, wore flowers on his, and like, there was just the way that they were done was a little bit different.
Oh, that's good.
It was they weren't the boring old black tux.
Did you marry Vandeveld and Sandberg? Did you guys see the same thing?
I did. I also Ryan Seacrest. He had some kind of Me Too bracelet on.
Oh, there was a lot of those going on.
That was the thing going on. And what about the big speech that Sandra Oh made at the end of her monologue? You know, do you remember that about women is looking and seeing so many different people out there? I thought she was being funny. I thought it was funny,
like,
but it was serious.
Joke.
And I'm like, what's going on? It just didn't seem to meld into the show.
Oh, it didn't feel like it landed? I didn't see it.
No, I did not. It did not land.
Was there any controversy, Nancy, or was it pretty flatlined?
With the host?
Yeah, well, overall. I mean, was there any controversy from the night that popped out?
There wasn't a lot. I don't think there was a lot. And I think that this year, you know, there weren't as many statements made as there were in the years past. I mean, there were still some, and I think that is because we have moved forward somewhat, which is, you know, a good thing. But I think they did have something to say. I think that Andy and Sandra have gotten a little criticism for their hosting, but I thought they did a good job. And I think that's because I've interviewed them a lot, so I know their personality, and they just have this dry sense, and the way they deliver things. They have a typical dry sense of humor. A lot of comedians do, but the way that they deliver it is even more so. So I think it's just fitting with the way they did, and I thought they moved the show very well, and I thought they kept the light when they needed to get light. And I think that maybe the confusion that you're talking about is like you didn't know if she was making the turn or not. But I thought they did a good job of moving the show, and I like their quips. I like the particularly like the part where Sandra called out her parents, and
I like that.
Yeah, that was just a real cute moment and sweet moment.
All right, well, let's talk about in this. Oh, you got one more?
Yeah, I do. Nancy, I want to know about your getting ready. On the morning of, did you know the dress you were going to wear, or did you have a couple of options? Did you, like, when did you start?
I normally have a couple of options. This time I only had the one option. But you know why? Because it follows Christmas break, and that's all the time that we had for. That's my reason there. Like, we had no time to have fittings and stuff and have a backup dress and all that good stuff. So I had my one option, and that was it. So we did the typical basic black just so it was easy, because over Christmas you don't have time. You're not in town to do stuff, and I was busy. Prepping for my Clemson Tigers that are playing the Alabama.
Well, that's where I was going. That's where I was going, because I know.
Okay.
I know what you're really concerned about. And by the way, watch Entertainment Tonight for all the post-Golden Globes and all the award season stuff. Watch ET all the time, period. All right, so here you go, Miss Summa Cum Laude.
Everything will be on tonight, including all the big fashion and the breakdown of all the fashion tonight.
Summa Cum Laude from Clemson, you know, a proud Clemson grad. Are you going to win tonight?
You know I'm going to win. Of course I'm going to win.
Look at you, cocky.
Championship. Bama's got to go down.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
They got to go down, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I do think Clemson's going to win tonight, and I think it's going to be a close game, but I think Clemson wins late.
I think they do, too. Yeah. I think they do, too. And Alabama, they've had enough. They need to spread the wealth a little bit.
I read a thing over
the national championships.
I read a thing. A thing over the weekend that said Alabama is ruining college football. So,
well, Alabama is not actually college football. They're like NFL light. And the difference between Clemson and Alabama, Nancy, correct me if I'm wrong, is your team actually graduates. So that's one thing that is a difference.
Exactly. You see. Like, just Bama's had too many.
Yeah,
it's
stop
like,
it.
You know, you can still like Bama. It's not like you don't have to, you know, you can still like them. It's like, you know, we love Meryl Streep, but she just won too many times. So we got to spread the wealth.
I like how Meryl Streep, the only person on the planet to combine Meryl Streep and Alabama in the same reference. That's very impressive.
Got to combine it with the Hollywood somehow, right?
Oh, nice tie.
We love her. Now, we can still like Bama, but we just got to spread the wealth.
All right, get a nap today. Thanks for doing this.
All right, it's good to talk to you guys. I'll see you tonight on the show.
There you go. That's Nancy O'Dell from Entertainment Tonight, who's pretty strong considering she slept 20 minutes, right? Pete Zimmerman has got another produce problem, and we'll explain where we are with that. And Adam Hogue's coming up as well. If you want to follow Adam Hogue, you can follow him on Twitter at I Watch Too Much Football. What is it? At Adam Hogue, I assume?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And he'll keep you up to date, and he'll tell you about the Bears blog and where the Bears are going from here. That's all coming up. It is 9:24. Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez on 60 Minutes last night. It's an awful lot coming to the 29-year-old big shot for the Democratic Party now. And the Democrats got to be careful. You got to be careful. You're mother effing Trump, and you got this kid who is the youngest person ever in Congress. Nancy needs to call everybody in for a meeting because she frightens me, you know, and I'm over here. So Nancy, she needs to rein the family in. Democrats need focus. Focus.
Given the business.
At 9:24, Pete's back. What happened?
Got another eggplant this weekend.
I thought we had moved on from eggplant to summer squash.
Yep.
Spaghetti squash.
Oh, I keep calling it summer squash. What's the difference?
Real eggplant? Oh, that's a big one.
I'm telling you what. They're spending some money on harassing you.
See, yeah, but I still I think this is a copycat carving again. I don't feel this is as precise as the first five eggplants.
Let me see.
Look at, there's messy lines on the edge. Do you see this?
Do we have eggplant scientists ready? Or produce
incomplete
scientists
piece it like they've left gaps.
What instrument are they using to do that?
Well, it looks like one of the knives from OJ, an OJ signature knife.
Uh-huh. Whoa!
All right, so here's the deal, Pete. Last summer, you started getting eggplants mysteriously dropped off at your house.
That's right.
We thought it had calmed down over the Christmas holiday, and then out of nowhere, you get a zucchini squash. What is it called again?
Spaghetti squash.
Spaghetti squash. How is it? Spaghetti is the word I can't remember. Spaghetti squash.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, well, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
What changed? What this change is crazy.
Yep.
No more eggplant. Then this weekend?
Yeah, this weekend on Saturday night. Or at some point between Saturday night and Sunday morning. Got home like Saturday to watch the football game at 7. And then went to take the dogs out at 9 in the morning on Sunday or so. And I noticed it.
I am in conversations, deep negotiations, if you will, with Apt Electronics to provide for you and for us, and for the greater safety of the community, the Apt Electronics produce cam, which would be outside your home so we could get a shot of who's doing the drop-offs.
Yeah. I will tell you, Steve, in a text chain that did not include you, somebody did accuse you of doing the drops.
If I had that kind of energy.
Yeah. You might hire someone to do it.
Yeah.
That's a more common.
Oh, hey, whoa, now you're onto me.
Yeah, because we had talked about the spaghetti squash, and I kind of, you know, I just kind of think like, oh, this is kind of a weird thing that's happening. But then this brand new one, after we've talked about it, it seemed very retaliatory.
Yeah.
More angry.
Yeah, it kind of freaked my wife out.
Well, it's understandable, because who wants produce dropped on your front step all the time with an angry anarchy A carved in each one of them?
Yeah. Well, it's weird, because they're just kind of tossed like near a bush by your house. Like,
right.
They're not quite as creepily placed like on the porch. They're like...
Would you like them posed?
Well, it's a casual tossing, almost.
They're afraid to be picked up by the Apt Electronics produce can.
Yeah.
This one was actually placed very close to a discarded Cheetos bag.
Oh.
So
facade.
Oh,
first off, I don't know why you're dropping your trash into your yard. Do you think at some point then they are maybe just doing drive-bys where they're whipping them out of the car?
I don't know, but it's...
How far from your car, from the car, like the street, to your front step?
Like 10 feet.
Well, so I would I don't even need much of an arm.
Oh, quit passing
to the eggplant.
Have
a clean shot just to toss it out of the car.
It could be, yeah. I'd like to see that.
Well, when you get the camera.
Yeah.
In 2020.
The Apt Electronics Produce Cam?
Yeah, in 2020, we'll get this thing set up.
And because we were talking about it, because we don't have cameras to, like, watch the dogs or anything. I just don't want to spy on anybody. It makes me uncomfortable to look at what people are doing.
But in this case?
Not even in this case. I don't think I could look at it. I think my wife would look at it to see what's going on, but it worries us. We talked about it, like, what if it's somebody that we know?
Right. What don't you want to know?
What if this is weirder than you even imagine?
Yeah.
Which is hard to be a listener. I'm sure it's a listener.
Well, what if we have like a courtroom artist just sit in a chair outside your house and sketch whoever comes by?
I mean, Pete's been in radio for almost 30 years in Chicago, so the listening base anger goes deep.
Hey, wait a minute. It's not me. I know it's not me. What about Dahl?
Yeah.
It could be Steve Dahl. Dahl's not working as much as he used to.
Maybe it's Buzz Kilman.
Yeah, Buzz lives kind of close to me. I know.
Does he?
There's got to be somebody in your neighborhood who's like a Gladys Kravitz who hangs around all day long and just observes things in the neighborhood, like a neighborhood watch person who you could ask to do this for you. There's got to be somebody.
The original vegetables
to watch
were actually placed. Now they're being tossed.
They've all been in the same area.
So none of them were carefully positioned?
No, I think they're carefully positioned. They could be tossed, I suppose, but I think somebody's walking up and placing them.
Okay,
and
I have a new theory.
You can't. They've been in a similar spot.
You can't
spot.
Say, is it in season? You've used
that
theory quite a bit.
No, I've done it. I try to move this forward. I try to move this conversation. Like, so, is it possible we've looked at this through the prism that this may be some sort of move of anger or some sort of threat? Is it possible that it's not, that it's out of love? That it's out of, hey.
Oh, I don't think we think it's
in
love, do we?
Yeah.
No. Well, love, wouldn't it be a heart then that was carved in the side of the eggplant?
Anarchy.
Okay, maybe not, but I don't think that's not the anarchy sign. The for the listeners out there, it's an A, but it has a line at the bottom of the A that closes it. And that's the part that makes it not an A. It almost feels like it's a tag. Mm-hmm. Like it's somebody who's it's their symbol. They're
well,
like,
the spaghetti squash had the other two letters. Remember Delta? I don't know Greek or whatever.
Yeah, that looked like somebody pledging a flat.
My second part is: have we started to think about maybe some more traditional language like Latin
or
others that might
like
use
alpha.
That? Yeah, that
so
might
the,
give
like
you
the
a better
alpha
idea.
Dog. So maybe they're saying...
Okay, let's say this is a Latin letter. Yeah. All right, now what?
Looks
what does
like
that
it's Illuminati, actually. I'm looking at a picture of Illuminati.
So there you go.
So it's
better?
Tom Hanks? It's Tom Hanks or Dan Brown? Dan Brown wrote the book.
It's not going to be someone who's dropping it off because they want you to have a bountiful winter because they put it in a basket and say, hey, this is left over from my garden.
Yeah.
So it's not that.
But the thing is, we haven't got to the point where we've ascertained, or any other part of your body, that that you've angered someone.
Right. I don't think so. I don't think we have. I mean, you know, everybody probably has enemies, but I don't think I know anyone.
But we don't get angry texts about you, like, hey, did you get the fruit? Hey, did you get the vegetables?
Yeah. No.
We don't get those.
There is a lady that complained about him sweating on her at Orange Theory.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you wash down the equipment. You bring in a power washer right after you finish each routine.
I don't think she knows where I live. I don't know.
I just feel like we're talking in circles on this unless we hire a detective or get a camera going.
Well, but it sounds like you don't want the camera now.
No, I do want
the camera.
Oh,
you do want the camera. Yeah,
they just don't want to check it, so I think I'll be the person that looks at it. I'll screen it.
Well, that'll be cheap.
Okay.
Figure out a way to have the video go to your house.
What if it's you, Mary, that's doing this? I mean, shouldn't we have an...
Yeah, I guess
you could
have
she
an independent party.
She wants to keep
party,
the bit going.
But I know I am not doing this. If I was going to come up with a bit, this is not it. We can discuss Pete not being able to shower at home starting tomorrow. That bit I'm all for.
Wait, speaking of Pete, have we eliminated Pete McMurray or David Plyer?
Oh.
They're both constantly looking for attention.
See, that's what Tim on 773, he says, is it possible it's a compliment?
or a gift. That's my point. Like, to try and think of different ways to interpret this. Automatically, we think it's on the steps, so it's got to be some sort of threat,
like a housewarming.
But is it possible? Like, gift. It's a compliment, like someone who's eccentric.
Is somebody trying to get on the show? Like, they're pitching you to be a guest. Hey, is it Henry Winkler with a new TV show coming up? And it's hey, you know, it's Fonzie. It's Fonzie. The TV show's coming back, huh? Yeah, I figured it out.
And I don't think it's thrown because it's in a similar spot all the time. Right. You know,
plus it's not bruised.
You can't take the aim. Your aim would be tremendous if you're flinging this out of a car.
Okay, so just to recap, the Apt Electronics produce cam will be installed.
Yeah.
And then Sandberg will go over the video.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we'll come to some answers.
And I think Rosanis is right. If there's a private detective that's listening that wants to offer pro bono services, I think we can get them involved as well. I think that's a great idea. Someone who can actually go investigate this a little bit.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about John Drummond earlier. Can we get Drummond over there?
Yeah, the Bulldog. Right.
Couple of years too late.
Who's the guy that does the hotel rooms with all
Dave Savini?
Yeah, get Savini with a key. Yeah, with this blue light.
Yeah. Blue light. Yeah.
Yeah. Have we dusted any of these for prints?
We tried, but we all touched it.
Yeah.
So it turns out you did do it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Pete. Listen, we wish you well.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll update you on the camera negotiations. I was going to solve the wall problem, but more importantly, I'm trying to negotiate a camera. It's 9:33. What are we doing? A quick break? Yeah. Break down the headlines on 720 WGN.
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport, the thrill of victory, and the agony of defeat.
43-yard attempt. From the right hash mark.
Not like this. Not like this.
And oh, he hits the upright again.
No!
That's impossible.
Third prize is you fired.
Did this hit the upright and the crossbar?
No!
Season's going to end on a double doink.
Bottom line, it doesn't go through. The Philadelphia Eagles going to the Elite Eight.
Great job by Super Joe. A montage of the heartbreak and the pain.
We really didn't already have our hearts broken.
Well, but I think if you can creatively tie it together,
it's good.
It's not a coincidence. It's raining and it's overcast this morning.
You think God's crying?
Yep. Grabowski. God Grabowski is crying.
Adam Hogue joins us now, and you can follow Adam Hogue on Twitter at Adam Hogue. You can read his blog. Where, Adam Hogue?
WGNradio.com/bears.
Adam Hogue, do you think there's a reason I have to say your full name, Adam Hogue, whenever I talk to you, Adam Hogue?
Oh, seems like you've been clued in on this whole thing.
I don't know the story. Is there a story behind why everybody has to say Adam Hogue when they talk to Adam Hogue?
Go ahead, Adam.
Well, it starts with Ted Albrecht, right? And someone pointed out to him that he always just calls me Adam Hogue instead of Adam, and now he emphasizes it every single time.
Yeah, so every time we're like out to dinner on the road, everything he says to Adam is, "So Adam Hogue, what are you having for dinner? What is it, Adam Hogue? You going to have the soup?"
It's just, I don't know, there's something about the rhythm of your name. It's sort of like Anna Balaval. I couldn't call her just Anna.
That's what I say. It's eight letters, one word.
Yeah.
Adam Hogue.
That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, nice job all season long.
It's also been brought up to me from the control room that there's another Adam in the booth, Adam Phillips.
Well, that might have had something to do with it.
Well,
not
in my
much.
Case. Okay. Adam Phillips isn't part of my day.
Right.
Okay. Adam Hogue. All right, Adam Hogue. Great job by you all season long, and we will continue this through the playoffs. And a Twitter follow is a great way to keep up to date with what other Adam's talking about. But let's go back to one fat eagle finger. Was that enough to change the direction of the kick and cause it to be a miss instead of a make?
I mean, I don't know that there's maybe sports science can prove it.
Well, what are you doing? Why aren't you on the phone with a physicist from the UFC or something?
You should be talking to a physicist, not me.
Well, you're the guy.
I think so because and I'm basing that off of Cody Parkey in the locker room last night. I mean, he legitimately seemed bewildered of how that kick did not come back to the right. He thought he hit it perfectly. He played it left to right because that's what the wind was doing, and he just didn't seem to have a clue why it didn't come back. And of course, they didn't know it got tipped. No one knew except for Trayvon Hester, the defensive lineman on the Eagles, who got his tip of his finger on it.
But so, you believe you have definitive proof of that. You're one of the first people to say it, by the way. Congratulations on breaking the fat finger story. But you believe you've seen enough of the replays and enough of the projected trajectory of the ball to believe the tip was real.
Well, I do think it got tipped because if you watch very, very closely, the spin on the ball, which you can tell from the laces.
Yeah, it looked like a wounded duck.
It just changed ever so slightly, and to me that's enough to make a kick that you're I mean, think about it on a golf shot. If you're trying to draw a golf shot
or cut it,
and it hits something just ever so slightly, like, I don't know, whatever it could be, it might not do exactly what you are trained to have that golf ball do.
Cody Parkey got a double cross. He tried to hit a fade and he hit a hook instead.
And he got a double doink out of it. I mean, it's just a brutal way for the whole thing to end. I feel for everyone involved. But I also think it's fair whether you're going to give Cody Parkey a pass because it got tipped or not. And I'm not necessarily saying he deserves that. The body of work over the season was not good enough. And we all knew coming into this game, this was the biggest weakness. And I kept saying that with the idea that it was a possibility the season could end this way and that they had to do everything in their power to avoid that type of situation. They just could not feel comfortable with it coming down to a Cody Parkey field goal.
So is he gone?
That's it.
Is he gone?
I my gut tells me yes, for two reasons. One, just it's simple. I mean, Ryan Pace has done an unbelievable job here, but he has not done a good job with the kicker position. Seemingly every move he has made with the kicker has been the wrong one. And there's a reason why Cody Parkey has been on five different teams in 5 years. I don't know what that reason is, but he's the general manager, and he should know. He gets paid all this money. It's going to cost him $5 million of a cap hit to get rid of him. But when you have Robbie Gould, who is this franchise's all-time leading scorer, as a free agent, in the building with his kids because he still lives here and loves his franchise.
Yeah, well, he was selfish, and he should have come down and kicked for him.
yeah. My point is, this is a no-brainer to me. I mean, it's going to be a lot of money for a kicker for 1 year between what you owe Parkey and what you're going to have to pay Robbie Gould. But I think you absolutely have to make that move. If no other reason, you guys know this city. You know how Cody Parkey is going to be treated going forward. And it's not going to be fair. Going now, the criticism to this point is
fair, coming
but
back.
But going
from
forward,
that.
He's not going to get a chance in this city.
Well,
you got to save him from that.
Can Bartman kick?
I don't know. Now that would be an ending to a crazy story.
Cody Parkey and Bartman ought to get an apartment together. Yes, Justin.
I have a question about the defense, Adam. The defense, the number one defense, everyone afraid, and they played well. I mean, to give up only 16 points is admirable. But you also saw missed tackles. You saw some other out-of-character stuff, like 12 men on the field, only 10 on the touchdown. They seemed a little out of sorts. Why was that? And not to mention Eddie Jackson not getting on the field. The defense didn't seem bear-like yesterday.
It didn't, because in the end, they had a chance to make the stop. And that, as much as I just got done saying you didn't want to come down to a field goal, you absolutely did want it to come down to a fourth quarter stop where the Bears had the lead and it was up to the defense to come up with a big play. Because anyone would have said before the game, yes, I will take that situation because I trust this defense to get the stop. And they didn't get it done.
No, and fourth down, too. They're brilliant on the first three. And fourth down, they have a leak. I mean, that's no good.
But Justin's right that there's missed tackles earlier. And I brought it up a few times this season. Kyle Fuller, who had a great year, all pro, he has a tendency to throw his body into guys instead of wrapping up.
Right.
It's been on the film all year, and in a big moment, he misses a tackle. Deion Bush, in for Eddie Jackson, misses a tackle, although that's been a problem for Eddie Jackson this year, too. That's one of the criticisms on that All-Pro. It just, in a big moment, they didn't get it done. It feels wrong to blame the defense. But Danny Trevathan said earlier this week, we will be remembered for what we do in the playoffs, not what we did all season long. And that's harsh, but that's coming from a player. And he's right. They didn't make the stop in the fourth quarter.
Expectations being what they are, as you look towards next year and you look at the schedule the Bears have to play, I mean, they benefited from being a last place team. And you never know because teams change year to year. But they're scheduled next year, Adam, and I know everybody's going to go into the year expecting them to be the favorites, and rightly so. But just at home to be playing the Chiefs and the Chargers and the Cowboys and the New Orleans Saints and then going on the road to play Philadelphia again, plus your division games. I mean, they better be just as good next year to survive that kind of a schedule.
Yeah, because look, you look at what happened with the Chiefs and Rams last year. They lose in the wild card round. They were up and coming teams, and now they flipped it this year. They both took it to another level, and now they got first round byes, and that is such a big deal. I don't know that if you guys realize it, but 9 out of the last 10 teams to make the Super Bowl were one seeds. 9 out of the last 10 teams to make the Super Bowl were one seeds.
Well,
it matters what you do in the regular season. And so for this Bears team to take that next step next year, if we're talking Super Bowl, they need to get a first-round bye. You bring up that schedule. It's an unbelievably fair point. You have to go to L.A. You have to play the Saints. You have to play the Chiefs. You also have to play the Chargers. I mean, we can go through it. The Dallas Cowboys won their division. The New York Giants beat you this year, and they're going to be a lot better next year. The Eagles, you have to go to Philadelphia next year and play the Eagles.
I love it.
There's even the possibility of a Vic Fangio matchup. If he ends up as the Broncos head coach, the Bears go to Denver. And, oh, by the way, you don't have your defensive coordinator in that situation. So nothing is guaranteed next year. As much as I believe the team will be even better, it's going to be a much tougher road.
Adam Hogue. Thank you, Adam Hogue, for being on, Adam Hogue. And we'll talk to Adam Hogue about the rest of the playoffs coming up later in the week.
I'm glad this thing didn't come up until the end of the year.
Adam Hogue?
Yeah.
Just be glad that you're the superstar that you are.
Did you ask him about the possum?
Adam Hogue and the possum?
Oh, yeah.
There's no time for it, so he can bring it up next time we talk to Adam Hogue.
Thanks,
thank you, Adam Hogue. I heard pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. We all repeat. Who thought Paper Lane would be back? I heard my mama cry. It's a disc jockey flashback. Bill and Wendy will join us in just a second. Sandberg, what's on the show tomorrow that we should be plugging?
Tomorrow, we're going to be giving away another Bartolini's gift card, $50. So if you want a giant meatball sub, this is the place you got to listen.
You know, this is your giant meatball show. Yeah, without a doubt.
Officially.
Kevin Spacey standing up in the courtroom in Nantucket, Massachusetts right now, facing charges of assault. The young man who is accusing him is a little older than a young man now, but he is sitting across in a situation that can only be described as awkward. So we'll see what happens to Spacey today.
Steve, there's a story that he is still getting acting offers in Europe and in England.
Because they're okay with pedophilia there? I don't know what that is.
They're willing to look the other way.
Wow.
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Yep.
Is that perfect or what?
Mm-hmm.
Really is. The Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Steve Bertrand there next. Silence makes me wonder if I should be on the air. It's 10 o'clock and Bill and Wendy are here. Are you guys depressed about the Bears? You okay?
That silence we just experienced, we got 2 hours of that coming up.
Just as a tribute?
Yep.
Yeah. I can't even.
You can't even what?
Anything. I can't believe it. I can't. Mm.
I'm just am so thrilled about their great season that I'm fine.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Were you like that when it happened yesterday? Were you like,
when it happened, I think we all needed a moment.
Did it feel like, remember when The Sopranos ended and everybody was watching their TV?
Yeah.
Going, What just happened?
Yeah.
Matt Nagy's face was the best.
Yes.
When it happened again.
What? Yes.
Well, the kid's got talent. To hit the upright 7 times
tough
in one season, not easy.
Wendy has explained to me that that should be worth more points.
And when
I agree.
You hit the crossbar, too.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
You get 10 points for
double
that.
Double doink, you get 10?
So he's just ahead of his time.
Yep.
Once they make the rule change.
We also did 4 hours of the show talking a lot about the Bears, and we didn't even talk about the Anthony Miller catch, not catch, fumble, not
that was
fumble.
Weird, too.
Bizarre.
Like, first time that's ever happened
in
the NFL.
Well, because it took them 20 minutes on TV with video to try to explain it. What could we have done
And
here?
I love that they have the refs that are in the booth, you know, the former ref.
Yeah.
That guy came out, he's like, that's a terrible call. And then it took him, I think it was a call from New York or something.
Don't
like,
say that.
The next time he came on, he's like, not a bad call.
Right.
Like, he changed his tune a little bit, but yeah.
Yeah, Mike Pereira, right?
Mike Pereira. There was another guy. It wasn't Pereira.
No,
it wasn't.
It was Terry McCall.
But yeah, Terry.
Yeah.
Who's the muscle? Hustled up NFL ref.
Oh, Ed Hockley.
Ed Hockley.
Ed Hercules.
Do you remember the greatest Ed Hockley moment? Ed Hockley lost track. All these guys, when they try to explain the call that they've reviewed, usually stumble.
Yeah.
And Ed Hockley stumbled, and he goes, the guy's on the ground. He's giving him the business. Yeah, and he's probably making the fist-pumping motion.
Well, the referee yesterday at one point said, I think it was in the Bears game where he says, we have a penalty and so we're going back. It might have been that same thing, right? And he's going back and his voice sort of trails off like, I don't remember.
Back to the future, Marty.
Is that when he goes, I don't know what the hell's going on either?
Yes.
Yeah. Dave, when you catch a ball and someone else's hand is in there, isn't that interference or something?
No, not necessarily. I mean, you have a right to go for the ball, too.
Someone else's hand is in there. It's just the beginning of the evening. We'll be back tomorrow.